call the regular meeting of Savannah County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with a moment of pledge allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
That's all.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much.
We will now start with the adoption of the agenda.
I move that the agenda be adopted as presented.
Motion been made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. We'll begin with Senator Mr. Nichols retrieves his ink pen. I was feeling anxious. All right, Mr. Nichols.
So, Board, if you could join me up front, please. And Mr. Steele. So Mr. Stevens is one of the first people I brought on board after I was hired. We did some new hires back then in 2012, and we're delighted to be able to work with Wayne over the last 6 years and use his expertise and knowledge, especially when it came to all of our water and sewer systems, but through the breadth of public works. Wayne has accepted a new position with Goochland County in their public utilities department. It's a great position that matches his background before he got to our county. But while we're sorry to lose him, we are pleased that he's got an appropriate and important job there too that would be good. So we'd like to honor him by presenting the certificate of commendation to J. Wayne Stevens for services set forth in the following citation. For meritorious service, impressive accomplishments, and commitment to excellence while serving as Director of Public Works from 2012 to 2018. Mr. Stevens brought extensive experience and technical engineering skills to Savannah County. He was a fair manager who demanded and provided equal treatment for all members of his department. During his tenure, he established and implemented a comprehensive fleet management and replacement plan for county vehicles. He coordinated with Parks and Recreation to reestablish regular maintenance of county parks and athletic fields. He successfully managed numerous significant county projects, including construction of the new Fort Union Fire Station, the Fort Union Streetscape Project, Pleasant Grove House and Museum, Western Trailhead Comfort Station, the Outdoor Stage Facility at Pleasant Grove, and the Farm Heritage Museum. He supervised renovation of the County Administration Building and the Treasurer and Commissioner Building, creating safer and more efficient spaces for improved quality of work life. He developed a widely lauded standard signage design used by the county buildings and facilities. Mr. Stevens also developed a methodology for using cost allocation to prepare budgets for the various county-owned and operated public utility systems to accurately assign general expenses to multiple utility-based funds. In addition, he developed a detailed financial and rate analysis for the Fort Union Sanitary District water system, including a 20-year financial model and rates to accommodate system upgrade needs. Most notably, Mr. Stevens was the key and essential member of the county's team working on water infrastructure needs. He performed numerous detailed studies of options and proposals for providing public water and sewer services design crossroads and led the development of project bid documents and selection of contractors. His list of accomplishments was a reflection of the breadth and depth of his positive impact on county operations. Mr. Stevens' tireless efforts to improve grounds and facilities maintenance support and to improve and expand public utility services to help support economic development had a lasting positive impact, and his efforts supported Savannah County's goal to be a great place to live, learn, work, and play. So I'm John and Sherry, the chair.
I
Couple quick things. Parks and Rec holiday events are coming up on Friday night from 6 to 8 at Pleasant Grove, the kind of the annual tree lighting, and Santa will be there, and arts and crafts for the kids, and light refreshments. Could be a chilly night, so the hot chocolate will be nice. There's also holiday performances on Saturday down at the Carysbrook Performing Arts Center from 2 to 4, and the schedule of different performances you can see there through that afternoon, and a free photo with Santa, so hopefully families can get their kids down. Indeed, you can. He might even let you sit on his lap, Mr. Weaver.
Oh, very good.
So maybe Mrs. Claus will show up, so.
Wow.
Anyway, a really great event for the kids in our community and for all the families, so those are coming up Friday night and Saturday. If you're ever interested in what's happening with the CVEC broadband expansion, it's pretty easy to check a fairly up-to-date online area for that, and that's through the Firefly Broadband, Fiber Broadband Company, who's the partner for Central Virginia Electric Cooperative in their broadband expansion. So that website that you see on the screen, I'll click it and pull it up and show you here. We must be on dial-up today. So this Firefly website, it's pretty easy to navigate. It shows, you know, where it's coming from, what kind of service costs there'll be, the 100 megabits or the 1 gigabytes, and then the VoIP. There is a one anomaly on here. It says $34.99 per month there, but then below here, underneath there, it says $29.99. And it had been $29.99 all along, so we'll have to have them deconflict that number. But down here, it'll show where they're doing builds, Appomattox County, Nelson County, and then Fluvanna County. If you click the map, it'll show a more detailed discussion of where the work is being done, what roads and things are covered. Shows the map of the area. So that's the Appomattox build. This is the Nelson County build through Martin Store, that substation. And then the Fluvanna County substation, Design Crossroads one, is in the northwest corner of the county. And they'll be listing there pretty soon, because construction will actually start on that in the not-too-distant future, within a month or two, we believe. Or maybe even the end of this month. He said the other night when we were at a meeting, and I can't recall exactly what he said, but soon. And so that build-up will go on. I'll give you a more detailed update later on, but this is available for the community to get into, too. So anytime there are updates on what CVEC is doing and their subsidiary, Firefly, is doing, it'll be on this website, and you can get questions answered and see what's going on. So we'll be publishing this, and CVEC will be publishing this website to the community as well, since it'll cover about 85% of our homes. The Emancipation Proclamation Monument that's been placed in Civil War Park, the unveiling for that is on February 12th, and that's President Lincoln's birthday. It'll be at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. We'll have more to come and more notification to get on your calendars, but just want to let you know that the Historic Society is scheduled for that Tuesday afternoon. I hope it's not cold that day. Mr. O'Brien, you'd asked about tax incentives, and we talked last time about what can we do as far as some dollar valuations of tax. You already have this on the tax on our code. Mr. Sheridan, I think, is here. Hasn't made yet. He was intended to be here to be able to answer some questions on this too. But based on a specific dollar amount, what we did is said we did some work with the commissioner's office. You could provide a one-time incentive for the non-commercial power customers. And then here's the process that we go through. Relatively simple process. And some minimums and requirements that would be put on that you'd have to put in place. And here's a potential cost ramification. So far in 2018, there have been 19 solar installation permits, and the numbers are increasing, but likely because the cost of solar is going down, so the number of installations is going up. So if you did 15 a year and did a one-time tax exoneration of $250, then that's the tax loss to the county in these columns, and then here's $375 or $500.
What do you mean by the installation permits? What kind of permits are you referring to?
They have to get a permit from building inspections downstairs.
Put in a solar.
Mm-hmm.
When did that start?
I don't know. Building official.
official's not here, I'm not sure, but it's been there since I've been here.
Because I put money in 25, 30 years ago, 35 years ago.
A lot of things were different 25, 30 years ago. I had dark hair then, too.
I'm not sure the county had 25 people.
He wasn't even born.
We wouldn't be doing it unless it was required, so something changed in state code that requires us to do inspection on it. But they have to get a permit, and then we have to clear it once the permit is, once the construction is done, like a certificate of occupancy for a house, so.
Would this be retroactive?
No, you'd be going, well, I don't know of any simple legal way that you could make it retroactive. Almost all of these times the laws are prospective, not retrospective.
That's right.
And in this case.
Unless there's a specific provision that it's retroactive, it's not.
And so in this case, you could see what the dollar amounts are, assuming that there were 30, and the max would be $15,000 in revenue lost. They already get a tax break on the solar itself, but this would be like a capital cost tax break, one-time exoneration on the real estate tax. So on the screen there,
no,
could be
not for the one, not for the installation, but for the use.
Right here, the red.
They don't charge anything on the equipment.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, the government back then.
You had significant
amount,
rebates and discounts and loan programs and
taxes.
Sure. Yeah, and there are still occasionally some of those around,
yes,
and sometimes there are some. Energy tax holidays for buying energy efficient appliances or solar or things like that, but it's going much more out of vogue on any federal financing for it or state financing for local use because the costs have come down so much from what they used to be. And pretty soon it'll be kind of a ubiquitous thing that goes on every house, but you know.
I think Fairfax County currently provides something like a $1,500 tax incentive. A number of different counties provide different incentives. I don't know if you did any research.
Yeah, I don't see any remote comparison between us and Fairfax County, but that's true. They do provide a fairly substantive one, but I can check other rural counties and tell you what they are if you want to know. But
that's probably because the same house up there or down here costs
$600,000 instead of.
Oh, I'm just saying. My only point was that other counties do provide a tax break.
We wouldn't be the only county for sure.
That's all I'm saying from that standpoint. I wasn't trying to say we need to provide a. 59. I think this is a way to show, because we've had a number of people ask us to speak out on solar, it's a way to show that the county is thinking about the cost and how to, and the environment and how to make it a better place to work, live, learn, and play from that standpoint. And certainly passive energy is very much on the minds of a lot of people in the United States and throughout the world.
And
I think that we can contribute.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of things
very,
that you can do.
So,
I mean, I think it's a very modest gesture on the part of the county, probably be recognized very positively, and I don't think that the impact is very high. So, of course, I'm all in favor. So, do we need, if we were to make a motion during new business?
You will not make a motion now because this could not go into effect until next fiscal year.
Okay.
So, you would need to, I'll bring it back to you formally, show you, lay it out, have motions, do all that kinds of stuff, and then you would just adopt it sometimes during budget season so that it would be effective either July 1st or January 1st, whatever is legal.
Okay.
But it wouldn't be, you couldn't do it January 1st now. I think you have to have for a would we have to have a public hearing for this one?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, so you wouldn't be able to do it for January 1st. It'd have to be July 1st at the earliest, but potentially January 1st of the following year.
And did the commissioner provide any feedback in terms of how difficult it would be for him to manage this one-time tax credit?
On this page right here, mm-hmm. Not at all difficult. That's kind of the process to go down. These are some of the things you'd have to set if you wanted to go forward with it. You'd have to decide the defective date, the effective date. You'd have to have kind of a minimum value. You know, if you put in a $50 solar light, well, that's not what we're talking about. You're talking about a solar installation. And so you'd have to have a minimum dollar value of investment. That's part of what the building inspection's supposed to check on what goes on. And then it would have to be some start of new calendar year. So he says calendar year, so that would likely be July 1st of 2020. And the office can do that fairly easily because you're only talking about 15 or 20 or 30 years. Is he here now?
No, and everything's got to go through the planning commission.
Right. Well, no, not these. No, this wouldn't go through them at all. This would be something you'd set.
No, no, I'm not planning commission, but a building permit.
Yes, if there's a permit, when there's done, then that gets reported from his office up to, after Mr. Sheridan's office, right?
Sure.
So it's a relatively easy thing. And again, you're talking about 15, 20, 30 a year.
Yeah, well.
19 this last year.
If, I think, since we've had citizens speak out on it, you know, certainly going through the process of a public hearing and letting citizens speak out on it and letting the board make a vote on it would be a positive thing. So I'd like to see this move forward. If the board has general consensus that we should let it move forward. Excuse me? No, we can't, but we can instruct the county administrator to, you know, plan on make it part and, you know, when it's appropriate to advertise.
We'd have to get it on your agenda and follow whatever process is to put in place. And we would probably bring it as a sample to you first. You would review it, and then we would schedule public hearings and things like that.
Yeah.
So we have to check those law through Mr. Payne's office. But so I just need three head nods to proceed or three head nods not to proceed.
You got it.
Okay, got it. Thanks. Okay, and just a reminder, you've got one more meeting for this calendar year. Your work session starts at 4 o'clock. That's with the first half of the nonprofits, and then regular meeting at 7 o'clock. Until 7, after the close session. So 6 o'clock. And then regular meeting in January, but remember the date has changed. It's the second Wednesday. And then the fourth Wednesday will be your next meeting that month, and you have the other half of the nonprofits will come that night with a 7 o'clock regular meeting as well. Any questions I can answer?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We need to elect a new chair, too. So.
I'm getting ready to pay the any other questions? Thank you very much. I will now open the first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board? Come forward, state your name and address, and please keep your comments directly toward the board in under 5 minutes. Anyone wish to speak at this time? Seeing none, I will close the first round of public comment. There are no public hearings, so we'll now go forward with action matters. The first is O, Jefferson Area, N, Pleasant Grove Deer Hunt 2018, Mr. Payne.
Mr. Chairman, this is sort of second verse, same as the first. You've done this for a number of years in the past, and this would be simply the same iteration, the same activity. It's a controlled deer hunt aimed at controlling the population on Pleasant Grove, which, from what we see, is still needs to be controlled. It was initially encouraged by the sheriff, and I think the sheriff still supports it. What's done is it's organized by a group called Wheeland Sportsmen, which is a subset of the National Wild Turkey Federation. They hold these shoots all over Virginia in different places. They're specifically designed for handicapped hunters. I believe I'm correct to say everyone we've ever had, every hunter we've ever had, has been wheelchair bound, and that's what we expect. I said 7 to 10 shooters. We're expecting 7, but we wanted to make sure that if one more showed up, that wouldn't queer the deal. It's designed for afternoon only. The day we've suggested is January the 4th. And January the 4th is a day on which either sex deer are legal game. So if you're going to, a little commercial, if you're going to control the population of deer on a piece of land, you shoot the does, because they're the ones that control the population. So the sheriff will be running security on this. Mr. Spitzer and I will be there as well. And I think the chairman has volunteered in the past. I saw him sharpening his skinning knife, so we'll.
We're there for the grunt work, is what Mr. Payne is very nicely trying and eloquently trying to say. Jamie and I provide the grunt work, unless we can talk to some of our younger compadres to come with us.
It is a good learning experience for the young people, if you know any that would like to participate. So anyway, if there are any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them, but this is not new business for you to see before.
I'd like to make a motion.
I
move that the Board of Supervisors authorize the sheriff to conduct a deer hunt at Pleasant Grove for the purpose of controlling deer numbers, such hunt to be managed by Wheeland Sportsman, a nonprofit organization, providing outdoor recreation opportunities for handicapped hunters.
Do we have a second? Motion is made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now move forward with appointments. Jefferson Area Board of Aging, Job Advisory Council, Mr. Nichols.
This is just a reappointment of Ms. Burnick to, we actually missed the date on it, but it's just a reappointment of her being reappointed to the Jefferson Area Board for Aging Council, and I think she's our only applicant for it, so it's a reappointment from term immediately to April 30th of 2020.
She's not on the board now.
She is.
She is to reappoint.
She is. You appointed her.
No, her term expired.
Right.
Well, she chose not to be reappointed.
It's kind of confusing.
And now has decided to
Come
back home.
Okay, so what she said.
Yeah, I thought so, and I saw Jefferson Board,
I knew she was on. I didn't realize she had gone off.
Because she was on the advisory council before. Okay,
yes.
Got it.
And she's replacing her own term.
Okay.
So Burnick is standing in for Burnick?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board commission or committee. Jefferson Area Board of Aging Advisory Council.
Linda Burnick.
To be filled by Linda Burnick.
Do we have a second? Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
And that's for a term to end 4/30/2020.
Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll go with presentations. P, One Virginia 2021, Mr. Joe Shaver.
I am Joe Shaver, and resident of Lake Monticello, and also a coordinator here in Favana County of a group of about 25 to 30 volunteers for the organization of One Virginia 2021. And my purpose here tonight is to seek support from the Board of Supervisors for a resolution of support for our organization. One Virginia 2021 was established in 2013 by Lee Middleditch. Lee Middleditch was at that time the retired executive director of the Sorenson Institute. And the purpose of One Virginia 2021 is to engage in redistricting reform and end the abuse of gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is an abuse that has been carried out by both Republican and Democrats, who's ever in power at the time of the decennial redistricting that's done each year in the Virginia legislature. When we began in this work, part of what these volunteers here in the county do, we have a presence at the polls, we solicit signatures of support for the organization, and distribute information about what we want to accomplish. Back in 2015, we had a total of about 15,000 supporters. In 2017, that number had grown to 85,000 supporters. And we are now in a position where, with this last election, we're approaching 100,000 supporters for One Virginia 2021. We feel that ending gerrymandering, because when gerrymandering takes place, legislators are basically motivated by one variable: to ensure their reelection. They manipulate the districts to put them in a position to ensure their incumbency, and in doing so, create a system within the electoral process that really disengages an awful lot of the electorate. We have, I was working the poles at Lake Monticello Clubhouse here a couple of years ago, and a couple of women came out to me and said, why did I come and vote today? And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, both my delegate for the House of Representatives and my Senate representative, neither of them had somebody running against them. And I said, well, I'm sorry, ma'am, but you've been gerrymandered. They felt like they were disengaged and that it was no good for them to come and engage in the process. We have taken an approach. The reason for urgency this year is the Commonwealth of Virginia constitutionally does not have a provision for a popular referendum. You can turn in a million signatures and not get a constitutional amendment proposal on the ballot. So what's required is that a constitutional amendment has to be passed by both the House and the Senate of the General Assembly in two consecutive years before it can be placed on the ballot for a vote of the population. And for the coming decade, there has to be passage of an amendment both in 2019 and in 2020. And if it does pass both sessions, it would be placed on the ballot in November of 2020. So what we did was to appoint a constitutional amendment drafting committee that is extremely bipartisan in its makeup. You're looking at those there. Wyatt Durrett, a former Republican candidate for governor, Ken Cuccinelli, Ward Armstrong, a Democrat who was a former minority leader. A.E. Dick Howard is a noted professor at the University of Virginia Law School and a principal in producing the current Constitution, which was done in 1971. So we gave that committee some strong bipartisan support. They have produced that amendment. And there's a copy of it in your packet. And then also, this just came out this week, which is a graphic of the same thing. And it is a nonpartisan redistricting commission. And if you look at the graphic, it involves both Republican and Democrats in making appointments to the committee, but it also involves a group of independent voters that can be placed on the committee. And scratch-offs are done by both Republicans and Democrats. So it tries to reach that particular balance. There are now currently about 12 states that have independent redistricting commissions. Four of them have just passed measures within this past election cycle, and they are Michigan, Utah, Colorado, and Missouri have been, with this last election, established redistricting commissions. So I guess in closing, I would ask, if you have not seen it, this is a PBS special produced for us by the PBS station down in Richmond, Jerry Rigged. And if you'll find it on YouTube as well. And if you view it, you will see testimony in there coming at you in support of redistricting reform from Tim Kaine, Terry McAuliffe, George Allen, A.E. Dick Howard, John Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Barack Obama, Wyatt Durrett, Mark Warner, Governor Northam, Arnold Schwarzenegger, John Kasich, and Jill Vogel. A real mix of individuals in terms of partisanship. Finally, I received just today, it was just produced today, a survey, a poll from Christopher Newport University asking if people would favor redistricting reform. And it was favored 71% to 19%. Breakdown politically, it was favored by Republicans 65% to 24%. Favored by Democrats 81% to 7%. And then it asked the question, There's a proposal to amend Virginia's constitution to establish an independent commission made up of qualified citizen volunteers, including Republicans, Democrats, and independents. This commission, not legislators, would be responsible for drawing new district boundaries. That question was supported by 78% and opposed by 17%. Politically, Republicans supported it by 73%, and Democrats supported it by 88%. So there is a strong, strong movement in support of redistricting reform, and I would welcome your support through approval of our resolution. And if I receive that support, I will keep everybody on the good list.
Well, I would just say I'm so thankful that this law has allowed you to come
out. Mr. Shaver, maybe you could explain why the process of redistricting has not moved forward in the state legislature.
Our legislative history has been, we have proposed every year a redistricting commission, okay? And our legislative history has been that it has passed the Senate, and it has gotten over to the House of Representatives, and it's been assigned to the Privileges and Elections Committee. There's a thing that happens in committees. It's called PBI, pass by indefinitely. And when that happens, that legislation is laid down on the table and it dies. That committee in the House of Representatives has refused for 4 years to send our legislation forward for a full vote of the House of Representatives.
And that committee chair, I believe, has been the same chair.
I'm sorry?
The committee chair for that particular committee has been the same chair for the last 4 years.
Mark Coles from Spotsylvania.
My understanding in conversations is that basically this legislation has been blocked from moving forward by essentially two legislators.
I'm sorry?
My understanding is essentially this legislation has been blocked from moving forward for a vote by essentially two legislators. Is
correct.
Is that correct? I mean,
why yeah. would that be?
You know,
who are
I mean,
they,
yeah,
who
it,
are
it,
they
it's,
that,
excuse me?
Resistant. Who is resistant? Well, I'm sure Mr. Coles is one of them.
Yeah. I think like we see in Congress, in the Senate, it doesn't take but one person to stop legislation these days.
Yeah, that's what irritates me.
It stopped. So, it's sort of like if we had a committee and said, we're not going to move this legislation forward for a full vote.
But the question
that
is,
never comes
why?
Up. Because it protects their interests, right? If you are in a protected gerrymandered district, you're guaranteed your seat. I think 2 years ago, in the previous election, one of the political experts that always talks at BACO mentioned that 97% of the seats in Virginia were uncompetitive. I mean, just basically, why bother to run? Because you're going to lose. And that's what it boils down to. And I think that's what Mr. Shaver alluded to earlier is this process of locking in a guaranteed a re-election, unless somebody's moving out of the seat or retires or whatever the case may be. But if it's a race with an incumbent, 97% of those races are not competitive.
Well, you can
unless
say
you
that,
have unless
you,
you
say
have
that here in Fluvanna County.
Unless you have a major
we're not
driver.
Bring up the
kind of No. But I mean, but the point being is, yes, in some cases it may be because the district is drawn very competitively. In some cases it may be because there isn't citizen engagement and interest. But you know, on the other hand, if you take say the state senate seat over here, if you know that seat is absolutely locked and you're going to run against, you know, an incumbent Republican in this case, why are you going to put the time, energy, and effort into doing it when you're almost guaranteed a loss? So it discourages, in my opinion, debate, political engagement, involvement, and citizens having the opportunity to really get the representation that they're looking forward to. And unfortunately, the reason there are so many constitutional amendments coming forward at the state level is because they continue to be blocked at the local level. You know, they continue to be blocked at the legislator level. I apologize for saying it that way.
I talk about gerrymandering being a democracy killer, but
really
I think it's almost equally a slam at democracy when a total of six or seven people just can entirely kill legislation. and not move it forward. We had a we had a piece of legislation come at us a couple years ago, proposed by Steve Landis from over in Augusta County. And it was something that we probably could have lived with, because basically it changed the language for establishing districts and said that no district will be drawn that will favor or disfavor any individual, party, or candidate. And so it's what we call the gerrymander language that we put in the way to redistrict. Steve Landis submitted that bill and testified on its behalf when he submitted it. And then Mark Coles took all the legislation about redistricting and bundled it together and voted to table it. What happens down there is that after the House bills got tabled, then bills come over from the Senate that have passed there. And there was a piece of legislation with almost identical language that had been introduced by Jill Vogel, and Senator Howe co-sponsored it. And it had the very same language in it. And on the day of the full committee, all the Republicans voted against it and all the Democrats voted for it. Okay, and I sent Steve Landis an email and said, can you explain to me why something that contained your language you voted against? And if I don't hear from you, the only motivation of your voting against it, I can believe, is partisan. And I never heard back from him. But that's what is killing this whole process of fair representation, fair elections. And we want to change it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, next will be Q, TJPDC project options. Now I see that young man, Boyles, coming up.
So Mr. Boyles, the executive director of TJPDC, and I will tag team on this. And there's a presentation we're going to do here just quickly to show you kind of what happened. I asked Chip a number of months ago, and they did it in a timely manner. We delayed quite a lengthy time. We wanted to know what additional studies or reviews or assistance TJPDC could provide to the county. And so we had a meeting with my staff and with Mr. Boyles and his staff to kind of brainstorm a whole long list of things. So I think in your package there was a list of those things, but here's the list of the things we kind of talked about. Different kinds of projects that they could potentially do a study on or do a review on or do grant applications or a variety of things. And out of that list, after that meeting, then Mr. Boyles and the staff came up with these TJPDC recommendations. So I'm going to have him cover this, and then I'll talk a little bit about staff recommendations on it as well. So, Chip.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nichols. Yes, we had a great brainstorming session with Mr. Nichols and his staff, came up with a really good list of a lot of different needs here in Fluvanna County. And taking it back with our staff, we tried to whittle it down to what are some things that could be done quickly, could be done efficiently, and very cost-effectively. Biggest bang for the buck with Fluvanna County. I'll kind of skip around on this list of four because a couple of these, I believe, are fairly easy. One of which, thanks to Ms. Booker, who serves on the Ravana River Basin Commission, we already have funding to do a Ravana River Corridor Plan. The first phase of that was funded by Charlottesville and Albemarle County for an urban section, and the remaining portion is funded by the Ravana River Basin Commission. And so we're going to take that corridor plan all the way from the urban area of Albemarle County down to Columbia and the James River. And so that's something that is already in the works. It's something that we will not be asking Fluvanna County or any of our other localities for additional funding for. The only thing that we would be asking is of some staff time to help us to do some community engagement and just some data work, as well as some planning work for the area within Fluvanna County. So that's something that really and truly is already underway. So that's an easy sale. The other thing is number two, which is could be initiated the Fork Union Business District Revitalization Planning Grant. Our staff can write an application for to the Department of Housing and Community Development. They have community development block grant funds available that would help to fund a $3,000 initial study just to put together an application that, if awarded, then there would be up to $35,000 that would be available to do about a year-long planning process, in this case, in Fork Union, that would be focused on business revitalization. It would help to identify business facade improvements that may be needed, infrastructure improvements like sidewalks, landscaping improvements, whatever the community, and I kind of stop on the word community, because one of the very first things that would have to be established is that there is an active community group that will help see this project forward. DHCD won't fund anything if it doesn't appear to be the community buy-in, not just to get it initiated, but to see it throughout its process. And the initial funding to the PDC would be to help create that or identify if there's already an existing movement and an existing group. It can be a business group, it can be a community group. It just has to be something with citizens to make sure that, that this would be a sustained effort. Again, to me, this is a fairly easy one. We just completed the same process for Lovingston in Nelson County. We've been awarded the $3,000. They give a 60-day turnaround to put the application together, which we're in the process of for Lovingston. It's due January 9th. And upon that successful completion, then we'll be eligible for that up to $35,000 planning program. We would recommend the same thing here for Fork Union. We, in our meeting with some of the staff, we heard a lot of different interest for a lot of different things in the Fork Union area, and we believe this would help to pull all of that together into one project. Again, other than staff time and citizen time, there wouldn't be any financial commitments asked of Fluvanna County for this one. So that was, I think, a pretty easy one as well. The bigger project that we came up with, which, again, was a consolidation of a number of interests, was to look at a joint small area planning process for the Zion Crossroads area. We believe that this would be a great multi-jurisdictional project to partner with Louisa County on. We have received the same interest from them that there are some planning needs around Zion Crossroads. I believe with the recent news that they aren't going to move forward with their regional business park on up I-64, I think this makes this planning effort even more important for Fluvanna and Louisa to look at collectively. We just finished a very large multi-jurisdictional small area plan and that covered City of Charlottesville and Albemarle County at the Hydraulic and 29 intersection. We did that with a VDOT program because of the transportation needs there. Your Zion Crossroads are not nearly as bad as that area. But we do know from VDOT that they're already looking at some transportation improvements that the new configuration there has kind of created some concerns for them, and to be able to look into what future improvements would be needed. So VDOT would partner with this. We believe that this would be a very good use of some of your per capita money that you already pay to the PDC, that Louisa County already pays to us. We believe we can partner with VDOT for the transportation portion, and this would be a limited amount of funding to come from both Fluvanna and Louisa County. We also just completed a similar project up in Greene County in the Ruckersville at the 33 and 29 intersection. That was about a $25,000 project. So based on the scope of work that you would identify, we would be about in that range, of which most of it would already be covered through your per capita payments and through some VDOT assistance. the outcome of a small area plan like that would not only look at the roadway corridor, but would start to look at the land uses, what you would envision the future land uses in that general area would be. It would help you to establish a growth boundary within that area if there's not already one, but it could need to be massaged or relooked at. It can also look at some of the business endeavors there as far as the land uses. And the other thing is transportation, not from the roadway, but also transit needs. That was one of the things that we found out when we were looking at Greene County. We did not expect. We expected a lot of people were living in Greene County and commuting to Albemarle and Charlottesville to work, when in fact we found out there was a huge need for transit services to take workers from Albemarle County to the retail and food establishments in Greene County. People were commuting the opposite way than we thought they were. So that was a very successful project, a lot of community engagement, just like I was talking about with the Fork Union. One of the key elements to this is making sure that there is a community group that's behind this. We don't want to develop a plan that is a great plan and have you just set it on a shelf. If there's not the commitment by the community to take that and implement it, it's probably best not to even do it. And so we would recommend highly that, you know, that be one of the first things also established here if you were to move forward. Finally, the fourth item that we did identify, we do think that there is a need here, but there's a lot of work ahead of it before we would recommend moving forward with it, and that's doing a code audit. Looking at a lot of local governments kind of let their planning and zoning codes go long periods of time without reviewing them for their relevancy as well as some legal status. And we do think that's important to do, but it's also very, very important to define what your problems are first and then develop a scope of work. We have seen and we have done code audits from $3,000 or $4,000 worth of work up to $75,000. It's all in what your need is. And we would recommend for Fluvanna, while you're working on some of these other projects, really define what your need is for a code audit, then start to scope the work, put a price tag on it, and that might be a very good FY20, FY21 project. The other thing is that because per capita funds would be used for either project, you really couldn't do the Zion Crossroads and the code audit using your per capita funds. Just as a reminder, and I know that a number of you already know, and Mr. O'Brien knows well, is sitting on our commission, our per capita funds, we identify 75% of all of our per capita funds that go to regional projects, and that includes at least three localities involved. Then we identify 25% of our per capita funds that stay with the local government. So all of these projects would be using that 25% per capita funds, which for Fluvanna is about $4,000 a year. So it's not a big pot to draw from, and so you really don't have the ability to split it up between projects.
And so this was kind of a recommendation out of TJPDC that you could, as Chip said, you could do kind of one or number four, but you can't really do both at the same time. Number two, you could get started pretty quickly on, and number three is already moving forward, so you really don't have to do anything much with that. From a staff point of view, we really would hope to proceed with both options one and option two. I've already talked to Christian Goodman in Louisa County. He's definitely interested, but he has to present the discussion to his board, and he'll do that in January, and then Mr. Boyles can work with them as well. I think you could proceed with the Zion Crossroads work regardless of whether Louisa wanted to join or not, because we've got a whole corridor there. But if they did, it's probably better to work together. I know Mr. Babiak, the supervisor from the Green Springs District, is definitely interested in working and partnering. I don't know that the whole board is, but certainly he's talked about it. I think it makes a lot of sense. And with our water system going in now, over the next 18 months, this would be a timely way to buff up anything we want to do or we want that you know, Ms. Edwards to work on and the planning department to work on or to be able to add to our comprehensive plan. So both of those could be done and I think would be useful and not cause staff a lot of extra work because we don't have a lot of stretch to take on too many new projects now, but these would be particularly fruitful. And then we don't mean to exclude like doing streetscape in Palmyra or a streetscape or some other thing in Columbia, but we're not quite far enough along to add those on.
We do.
Right, and we just can't do everything at once, and we'd love to do more, but if this works out well, then we've got an iteration to do the next study or things like that. So, and these would be relatively inexpensive for us, with barring some staff time and maybe community meetings.
I'm sure we can find some community volunteers that would be willing
absolutely
to work.
Yep. Yeah, well, we've got a whole group that would love to probably get back together in Fork Union. The whole group that worked
14 years,
right?
We have what we have now.
Right.
So I'm
and we want to make
it
faster than that.
I mean, that was a true commitment.
Sure.
Yep. So I really just need head nods from the board. This is not contractual things, so we don't have to, you know, pay a lot of money. We'll get agreements with TJPC to work on these things. But if the board thinks this is reasonable and appropriate based on the discussion here and the list of things we talked about, or has another idea, we'd be glad to entertain it, of course, and head in whatever direction you want.
Ms.
Eager?
Yeah, that's fine.
Look at it.
I think I've already seen high head nods.
Okay,
let's
good.
Go ahead and get these things because business is what we talked about wanting to be interested in. So
indeed.
We need to focus there.
Great. Thank you very much.
We'll do it. Thank you all very much. I'll have a good evening.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you coming out. Watch out for that snow that's coming down. All righty. We'll now move forward with the consent agenda. R, minutes of November 20th, 2018. Ms. Harris. S, phone system contract amendment number one, Ms. Toller. T, Draper Aiden Project Agreement Number 2, Fork Union Fire Training Building, Site Development Plans, Ms. Toller. Are we going to pull anything or are we good?
Going to pull the minutes. I have a question on not a correction, but a question on the minutes.
Sure.
And that's on page 1954.
Can you tell me what it's about, sir? And what,
yes, what? Yes, it's at the bottom. We're talking about the $311,000 in escrow earnings.
Got it.
To be applied.
I just don't have the same numbering system in this file, so.
Okay. And you say you're going to put it to the January 15th, 2019 debt service payment. Now that $311,000, is that extra money that we hadn't planned on, or is that money that you had already put in the budget?
Extra money. New money.
So that's $300,000 we had not anticipated.
It's found money.
It's found money. We were going to have a $1.1 million debt service payment January 15th. With the $311,000 in interest earnings, that's going to reduce that debt service payment in this current fiscal year by that $311,000. So we'll have $311,000 left unexpended for debt
payment. So you're going to pay that extra. So
no,
it's not paying extra.
You can't pay extra. You have to offset.
Yes.
That means you'll have $311,000 more in your budget.
Yes.
That you didn't spend.
Yes.
Because we already budgeted to pay the payment. This is offsetting that, so you'll have $311,000 that essentially
yes
will go back to fund balance at the end.
That's
of the
what year. I was really getting.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, because you'd already approved the $1.1 million debt payment.
Right.
This will offset part of that, so you've got a balance
left.
That's
what I was trying to determine,
yep,
whether that was actually free money in a sense.
In
it
yes,
is
sir.
Fund balance.
Okay.
There's going to be both, from what I understand. There's going to be a paved section and a gravel section.
Right. We'll look at that to deconflict that because that's a good catch. Maybe it is conflicted there, but there will be both in that area to access the property.
Okay, that's it.
Great. Thank you. We'll make sure we check
any
that.
Any others? Okay. Well, we have a motion about the consent agenda.
I move to present the consent to approve it with the minutes of November the 20th. Phone system and contract and the Draper Aiden Project Agreement Number 2 for 4.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Alrighty, is there any unfinished business? Okay, seeing none, is there any new business? I'm going to bring up something right here. Something was brought to my attention the other day.
Yep.
Has to do with our 5-state troopers and our one game warden. Officer Hill, Captain Hill, would you mind stepping up here? Because he'll probably be able to help me out here. I should have called up and I just forgot to do it. But we have 3 radios, I believe, that these gentlemen have to drive to the sheriff's office. Go ahead, have a seat. I know you're not used to being in that seat.
It's quite all right.
He's used to it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
There's 3 radios they have to drive to the sheriff's office to check out if they use them.
That's correct.
All right, I'm going to make a suggestion that usually there's probably 2 troopers and a game warden on duty,
mm-hmm.
which would expand our providers from 3 or 4 deputies on duty to having possible 6 that can communicate with each other.
Right.
If we were to get 3 more radios, then we could assign each one of them their own radio. Even if they're sitting at home, they would then have a radio. Because right now, their radios won't communicate with the county.
Correct.
It was brought to my attention when we had the incidents where the young people were saying things shouldn't have on the internet, mm-hmm. that the troopers had no idea what was going on because they hadn't gotten to the sheriff's office to pick up a radio with them. Mm-hmm. How much are one of our radios? You know, 4,000?
The ones that we're using for them is right at about 4 grand.
For $12,000, we could put a radio in each one of their hands that they have at their house. And, you know, if they've got it on, they can be up to date on what's going on in the county and be able to help us right then. So I just...
Easy to do. My only question would be whether their supervisory chain would allow that.
Well, that's something we need to check into.
We can do that.
Because if we provide a radio to someone and have an expectation that they're going to have it at their house and have it on?
Well, no. They don't, even if they only cut it on when they come on duty, that puts them in there like, I mean, I'll just use David for an example. He's 20, 25 minutes away from getting the radio.
Sure.
That's 20, 25 minutes we have him additionally on duty.
Yeah. Their supervisor chain may say this is fantastic, but we'll have the sheriff's office and 911 see if it makes sense.
I wanted to bring this up and say, hey, we've got $12,000 we can get 3 more radios and put them in their hands,
mm-hmm. My question is, why would it have been set up that way anyway in the beginning? If we knew,
we have a limited number of supply radios.
Yeah, we have a limited cache of those radios. And so to make it available for any of them when there's a rotation, sometimes there's more than one of them working at a time. And so that would not give all of them access to radios as they need them if they're constantly pulling them out.
So would those radios always be in use, or if we're going to increase radios in 60 sitting in the station?
No. What I'm saying is we could hand those to them, and they would have them at their home.
Yeah, I understand that.
They'd be sitting unused for a good portion of time when the ones are not on duty.
Right.
But they'd be readily available when they come on duty.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's just like my radio, it's a fire department radio. You know, I don't have it with me right now. I'm not bored with it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I'm just questioning why would we be in the situation anyway.
Well, because we don't give radios to everybody that could possibly maybe sometime need it. That was the original thought.
Mm-hmm.
That was through fire, rescue, police.
Right.
Everybody agreed to that. This is just an enhancement.
This would be something that would enhance their capabilities and allow them to have extra people
right away.
I'm not asking them for them for every fireman or every rescue squad member. I saw that's one of the things that was brought up when we were sitting around and just people were talking about it. You know, I didn't know what was going on. I went, oh, wait a second, you didn't know what was going on? Well, my radios don't pick up the county radio.
Right.
So if we can make a $12,000 investment, you're right. 2/3 of the day, they may not be in use. May not be in use, but for the other 3-4 hours a day, we'll be getting 6 police officers instead of 3 on duty.
Seems to make sense to me.
If we have 2 state troopers with them.
I'm very confused, but you just give me the direction, I can get
out. I'm still having I mean, I'm not against it. I know you know what you're talking about, but I'm just...
Well,
yeah,
another thing,
that's
if this is viable, certainly you can see the communication, but it should be included in the budget. We're starting a new budget. Let it stand on its own merit compared to everything else, like we expect everybody else to do. And if it's really what we need, then go ahead and approve it.
Okay, well, this is just a one-time thing.
Yeah, well, then put it in the budget.
Okay, that means you're gonna wait till you let more.
Well, is that right to just...
But that sort of falls into the discussion we had last time about several items that were left over from within their own budgets. It's kind of in that area, but
yeah,
I understand your point. Yeah, I understand your point.
Well, I mean, and I'm not trying to argue. This is something that I saw sitting around because I'm with these guys or around these guys a lot.
Because we hadn't heard anything about this.
I just heard about it the other day.
Well,
I actually had one that's...
Put it on the agenda.
I should have. That's why I apologized when I started. I should have called up and put it on the agenda, but this is something we need to check into. If we can check and see if their guys will allow it, it would just be something that would help y'all, I believe.
Right. Well, we would be more than happy to follow up this conversation and check with the area office and their first sergeant about the ability for them to hold on to a radio that we would issue to them. I'll also consult with our director of communications, Michael Grandstaff, to make sure that there's a process.
I should have contacted all of you, but it's one of them things I just didn't think about it. When I thought about it, I saw you still walk in, I went, and I wrote it down right here.
And you know, it's in your mind because of the incident that we had at the school.
Well, I mean, you know, when I have a state trooper pull me over to ask me for a phone number, and we started talking, he goes, yeah, you know, and he goes, the radios said something about it, and he just said, you know, the incident went on the other day with the school system when we brought the buses all to the middle school.
Right.
He goes, I was riding around trying to figure out what the heck was going on because I hadn't had a chance to get by and pick up a radio.
It's just, this is a classic example of stuff comes up during the year.
This is something that came
That's
up,
right.
And it was just,
if,
like I said,
if we could do everything in budget season, it'd be great, but stuff comes up. And you don't want to wait 6 months, 9 months, a year to do it because it's important enough to do.
This is one reason I brought it up now. I think this is important enough that if we can fix it for $12,000, let's get it fixed.
So how about this? We'll have the sheriff's office review that. We'll come back with a presentation with you and a potential motion if there's any clearance for that, and then you all can decide.
Sounds good.
Okay. Great.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Not a problem.
Anybody else got anything else you want to bring up? If not, I will... Now open the second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on top of your directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? I do apologize for ambushing y'all with that one. It's just like I said.
That's no business.
Business.
Okay.
All right. No ambition.
Seeing no one, I'll close the second round of public comment.
Now, I would suggest that you go right to your work session right now, and then do close session and dinner afterwards.
I want to make sure we're legal.
Yep, already checked ahead of time.
We advertised it at 7:00.
No, it was just part of the agenda.
Okay. So now,
Mr. Chairman, just since you raised that, let me just say on the record that this was advertised as part of the same meeting.
Okay.
It's not a different meeting.
So we're
simply changing the order of the agenda, and I think I don't see any problem with doing that.
All righty, well, I will ask Mr. Winkler if he will come forward. And well, before Mr. Putnam leaves, I wanted to also say something real quick. Congratulations, Mr. Putnam was named to the Board of Agents,
the Alliance. Steering Committee.
Yes, sir. So glad to have your voice there to be heard, sir.
Right,
just
want
to say thank you and congratulations.
Appreciate it.
All right, Mr. Winkler. Ms. Gill,
we'll try to figure out a way that...
Well, we'll get you another chair. I got you, Kelly.
I thought Kelly
knew.
If I got to be able to witness stand,
you
got to
witness stand. Yeah, I think you can slide it over. I think we've had two chairs in there at once.
We're friends.
That's about sit on the railings.
Is that the drive?
Yes.
Is that the gear shift, steering wheel? Should I wait for Mr. O'Brien?
You're okay.
I think you just went to the restroom. You should be okay, sir.
Okay.
Yeah,
Chairman, members of the board, always a pleasure to speak with you tonight. I have a relatively brief presentation. It actually has some concerns. It talks about the carryover in FY18. It talks about our current year and then our projections of looking out in FY20. I'd like for this to be a true work session, if you will. Your screen here, you can see what I'm talking on. You can see the top from the cursor. So at any point, if you have questions, please just stop on that particular slide and I'll try to address them. It's not letting me advance.
Left mouse. Just click left.
I did.
There you go. Did that, Tom?
Okay. So we had a great year last year in 2017 and 2018. I'll give you just a few moments to take a look at that. It seems to be working now, unless somebody else does.
Yeah.
It's on now. Thank you.
Any questions?
Fully credit, and I think that's great. Fifth to second year.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
We're proud of that.
Very proud of that. One of 20 divisions across out of 132 divisions that have been accredited, fully accredited for 5 years in a row now.
Wasn't it 22 divisions last year?
It was 22 divisions, but now it's a 20.
So that's impressive. I mean, it's sad, but it's impressive that we still held that ranking there.
And so the state is starting to change the game a little bit with us under the implications and requirements under ESSA. In 2001, it started to be under NCLB, No Child Left Behind, and they're changing the game and changing our requirements. So a lot of our new requirements will come under profile of a graduate. There'll be a lot more emphasis on workforce readiness. You'll see a lot more emphasis on our CTE programs, and hence there'll be some additional requests within our budget for next year and probably and more than likely out years as we move forward.
I find that fourth item, 95.6%, where you say 14th highest in the rate I've noticed before, historically over the years. Look at some of the other schools, you're surprised at how much time they've missed.
So last year we almost made it to the top of the mountain at 97.1 on-time graduation. We were fourth in the state last year. We did decline, but this is still something. It's a huge accolade for our schools. And this actually worked. You think about on-time graduation, you think, well, that's just the high school, but that really starts early on, starts 13 years prior to those kids actually graduating.
Tell us what on-time graduation means.
I'll let Ms. Gillum completely explain that since she gives us a little bit more. I could do it, but I'll mess it up.
So it's every time a student enters ninth grade, they become part of that cohort. And so they look at the cohort of students that graduate 4 years later. And the only way a student is removed from a cohort is if they transfer to another school, either out of state or in state. But you also are responsible for kids that transfer into your cohort, which is sometimes that group that we see that doesn't meet that 100%. Sometimes we have students transfer in late their senior year that don't have enough credits. And so we still work with them to try to keep them on track and get them graduated. But it is more of a challenge when you get some of those transfer students.
Right. And then tell me and then explain what this full accreditation means.
Full accreditation?
Mm-hmm.
Again,
Well, the rules have changed a lot over time, so there are some different rules now, but basically it's based on your SOL test scores. They also look at your on-time graduation and your dropout rate, and also your attendance right now is factored into that as well.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
And again, so West Central and Central, their attendance also factors in now with Carysbrook, because our SOLs don't start, and that's been a major player under NCLB, was how we form our SEL. On our SOLs, particularly in the areas of reading and math. The state's starting to recognize that. The state's starting to incorporate more like project-based learning and things like that. It's unknown yet where that'll fall in the accreditation standards. But again, we've continued to see market increases. I want to say you haven't made it to the top until you're number one out of 132. But getting up there, getting an 85% pass rate, getting into the 90% pass rate, it's hard to continue to maintain that year after year after year after year. Yes, I'm very proud. I'm also very proud of you and this county as a whole from the third bullet from the bottom, that increased access to instructional technology from the Chromebook Initiative. thanks to your help, whether it be through CIP or whether it be through our budget as a whole, we've continued to add with our, not only our teacher laptops, our CPUs within the classrooms, but our Chromebook initiative. If you counted the number of Chromebooks, we're easily at a 1-to-1, but that's not necessarily our goal, meaning we have enough Chromebooks in our division to cover the 3,500 kids. We want to make sure they have enough to cover the classroom. So they go from a math class, they're not taking those Chromebooks to math, to English. We have enough in an English lab that we can pull them from there, or a social studies lab. But our next venture is more virtual learning, and we got some exciting stuff coming. I can't think of what those goggles are called, but I know they're called something that we're hoping to
VR.
But you're not working toward every student with a Chromebook.
No, ma'am.
They don't
no,
have
no.
internet half of
That's correct. That's correct.
Right.
That's not our plan.
Right.
That's not our plan.
A fancy iPad.
It allows our students to take certain aspects of our tests, meaning our SOL test, our MAP testing, that can all be done on Chromebooks. They can do some word processing. Really good. So much like your iPad or things like that, it's just a ramped up laptop. It's cheaper than I'm looking for. Mr. Nichols' MacBook right there. They're a lot cheaper. They're a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions about any accolades? We could have filled up pages with this, but I did want to point some of the major ones out. This is just a look because at our local composite index, all of our funding, or most of our funding, I should say, throughout the state template is based on local composite index, and we're always... Many times we're compared to the divisions or the counties that are listed here, and you can see where we fall and where we've actually gone up a little bit from local composite index.
That means less money, basically.
Yes.
It's the composite index.
It means we pay more.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. Any questions about the LCI?
Actually, what does that amount to? You know, we've gone up to 39
yes.
from 37. In dollars, would you have any idea, like maybe like $200,000 or $300,000? The difference.
I think last year we did the math; it was about that.
Yeah. So basically, the locality is responsible for 40%,
mm-hmm.
if you will. I mean, 39.1%. Whereas Gooseland is at the highest it can be. Their locality, most of their funding comes, 80% comes from the locality. Come January, their budget's passed for the most part.
And that's the highest. It doesn't go to 100.
Right.
Yeah, it won't go over 80.
Very rich county.
And I'm sorry, I don't know the exact dollar figure on that. We can try to find that out for you, Mr. Weaver.
Last year when you gave us the figures, it was between 2 and
I think it's between 2 and 3.
Yeah, that's about what I wanted to say. What that difference is from there to there.
Cost us more.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We got the figures from the state last year. They
didn't
change this year. That's correct. That's correct. They'll recalculate again the following year. And remember, it's based from years past.
Right.
Yeah. It's a little bit funny how they do the math on the local, on the LCI. Any other questions? This is a per pupil expenditure look, and this is from 17. This is straight from our superintendent's report, straight from the state. We have some numbers based on our overall number for 18 and then projected for 19, and mm-hmm. I think the next slide. You can see where Fluvanna is, and this is per pupil expenditure that's reported out from the state. And you can see where the state, so we're about $1,500 below the state. And consider markedly lower than what Charlottesville. But often we get compared to Charlottesville.
Yeah.
But you also need to look at in that 16,000 in Charlottesville is because of the programs they have.
Yes.
Their fine arts, they have the orchestra at the fifth grade level. They have big bands. Those are where their figures are driven as high as they are.
It's interesting
a lot of it.
To see Nelson County as a second.
I'm surprised.
Yeah,
that's
Mr. Winkler, do you know for sure what these figures are composed of? For instance, there's $300,000 in technology money that is in the CIP, therefore not reflected here, et cetera, et cetera.
I do not believe any of these figures
costs?
Show CIP.
Okay.
So
no,
outside,
CIP
outside.
Is not.
You have a broken down federal, state, local, and sales tax.
Yeah, so the question we need to probably drill down on sometime is to figure out if these other localities have any school-type funds that are done in CIP, so therefore not included.
Right.
If they have nothing included, then we're not on the exact same level playing field mm-hmm. dollar-wise.
Right.
We would just need to know that long-term.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I know some of our more rural counties are our neighbors. Louisa's basically comprised the same way we are, and their CIP is calculated completely differently. I wouldn't imagine that Charlottesville's, being that they're funded mainly from Albemarle, that's dollar for dollar. I wouldn't imagine there would be a whole lot of CIP numbers there.
It'd be interesting to have like a three-year running average of CIPs mm-hmm. from each locality for comparison purposes. I mean, you can't pick any one particular year. I mean, your CIP could be blown out, but mm-hmm. maybe if you had like a three-year running average.
I don't know if that information is published via the state, how much locality spend in
not
the
CIP. Not from there. We could get it because we could just go to the counties. And
yeah, you'd have to go to the counties.
That's all public record.
Their budgets.
I mean, like Charlottesville spends astronomically more on CIP every
sure.
year than we do.
Mm-hmm. Which I mean is a fair point because mm-hmm. you're if you're looking at
well, adding. It depends on if it's spending on school stuff
right.
that could be counted in an operational budget. Mm-hmm. The only thing we know of right now that normally would be counted in an operational budget in most localities is the CIP dollars. The building a new school, putting a roof on,
sure.
normally that's not counted
sure,
in any ways because
right.
it's CIP.
Yeah, but, no, excluding major
right.
works
some,
like that.
Some people, we made the conscious decision to do the $300K for technology so that it went to technology and it could only be spent on technology.
Right.
But therefore, it's excluded from operational budgets and from consideration
correct.
On a chart like this.
Correct, yeah.
I think we talk about this every year.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
We do.
Mr. Bibble talks about it every year at length.
Yes.
Well, what I think is interesting, with the $10,000 per student, you look at the tests, and we're very competitive. We do better than other students. You spend more on them and less on us, and our students are right up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, the interesting thing is if you go into School of Improvement or you become a division that's warned, you get more money to offset the costs and things. But you're also told how to spend that money, too.
Right.
So it is a double-edged sword with that as well.
Yeah.
Be also helpful on this graph to actually have the CIP composite index. I'm sorry, not the CIP, but the composite index number for each one of those localities because I'm looking at the different federal and state dollars spent there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go back to the previous graph to match that up, right? Mm-hmm. So
it doesn't obviously flow
yeah,
over.
It doesn't flow over in the same way, so that'd be helpful
we
to see right
there.
We can
work on that.
Any other questions from a per pupil expenditure? This is just a look at Fluvanna over the course of time from actual numbers. This is literally pulled total number of budget, total number of kids, divided into it. Same way with this year right here as far as it projected. Took our total allocation, 3460,
mm-hmm.
what we put into that
mm-hmm.
number.
Mm-hmm.
In Charlottesville, it was what, about 19,000 per kid?
16, I believe.
16.
Yeah, I think they're around
16.
16?
Mm-hmm.
16. 16.
They have no idea what their number's going to go up to this year. Absolutely no idea.
Nelson 13.
Yeah, I know. That's
Yeah, what was, just out of curiosity, so Nelson's composite index went down a little bit, 5.56.
But they're a wealthy county
yeah.
compared to us just
oh,
because
absolutely.
Of tourism.
Yeah.
And the big dollars that come in. And so.
Yeah.
And they have a low population, relatively speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, they have a declining school population right now, Nelson
yes,
County.
Nelson,
does.
Yes.
Yeah.
Talked to Dr. Engel the other day. And ways that, what do you got? I don't know. Build more. Build it and they'll come. any questions from just looking back over the course of time? Okay. And here's our enrollment. And you can see we reached a peak mm-hmm. in 2012. That was the same year we opened up the high school. Mm-hmm. This is a little misleading. These numbers are straight from the state funding template. We believe this is what we've budgeted. We've budgeted for 3460. We're above that right now. We're above that number, and that's actual ABM. And so that'll be a March number. Our caboose bill, all of our funding will be back to whatever that number is in March. Is it March 1 or March 15?
March 31.
So March 31. Mm-hmm. March 31. We believe we'll hit this number, possibly a little bit higher. And the way it's looking right now, it looks like this number will go up. I don't know what the state will be convinced with that. that's okay. If we have more kids, we'll get more money per kid for student from the state. But quite honestly, we're seeing the biggest influx of students at the high school level, once they enter, particularly ninth grade.
We have a lot of private schools that don't go to high school level.
That's correct. Stop at eighth grade.
And a lot of home.
And even in surrounding counties, take Grimes and Orange, it only goes to eighth grade, so they're either going to come back out if we're sending kids to Grimes, and I know we do send a few kids to Grimes. There's a lot of private schools around, not only necessarily this county, but around this county, that only go to eighth grade, so we're picking back up kids. Next year, we believe the high school, new high school, will be over 1,500 kids for the first time.
Wow.
For the first time. They're teetering on it right now.
When it first opened, it was at how many?
1,200? Probably 1,350, Mr. Yeah. O'Brien, if I was throwing out a number.
Yeah. Around about 275?
Yeah.
What it was.
What's the party?
About 275 to 300. Now we're.
Yeah, yes. Our grade levels were averaging, when I first came to the division 8 years ago, we had about 250 to 260 kids in the kindergarten class. If we took Cunningham, Columbia, and Central at the time, there was no West Central at the time. Last year, or this year, we have 220?
Yeah,
220 in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. But we have groups that are over 300. That cohort in ninth grade is 320, something like that. And we have a large group in seventh grade this year that'll go up, and it'll make it over 1,500 for the first time. Unless we lose kids, but I don't anticipate us losing kids at that level.
Well, let's put it this way. Three moved in last week.
Right.
Two or three moved into middle school because they were bringing them around education.
Yeah, and when you have a comprehensive high school like we have to Korean Tech, that's a real
absolutely.
That's a
yes, absolutely. And a big advantage for us, I had a discussion yesterday with, they're talking about some consolidation with a superintendent from Washington County and consolidating some of his schools and kind of what we went through. And he was looking at an 8-12 formation at the high school level and was trying to weigh the disadvantages versus the advantage. And for us, it made sense. But from the student standpoint, we can offer our eighth graders many more opportunities,
right,
particularly from a career and readiness standpoint,
yeah,
than most school divisions can. You'll see in a later slide where we're trying to bring vocational agriculture back down to the middle school. We'd love to have that opportunity. Of course, I'd love to have more opportunities at the middle school, but what you can afford, what you can do is something different. Any other questions about our enrollment? Yeah, kind of getting the meat and potatoes of the slide. The first slide I wanted to cover, or the first budget number I wanted to cover, was 2018. I will extend a sincere apology because I would never lie to you, and I don't feel that I have lied to you. But I would never make you a promise that I didn't intend to keep. Sometime in early June, I came to you and I asked for an additional $150,000 for a roof at Carey's Brook. At that particular time, we were planning on using $300,000 of carryover to put in this year's fund balance to help us make improvements, give raises and things like that. And we needed a roof at Carey's Brook, and I said I needed another $150,000. And I said, if you give it to me, I'll promise there'll be at least $450,000 in carryover. At that time, I also said, I'm planning on not being at 1% at $400,000. I'd love for it to be 2%, if even higher percentage. I'd love for it to be closer to $800,000. And we believe it's going to hit somewhere between $650,000 and I might have even used $900,000 at one point. I said, but anything over, and we kind of said this tongue-in-cheek, or I said it tongue-in-cheek, anything over that $450,000, I would ask for back. Didn't mean you all would have to give it to us, but I would ask for it back from a carryover perspective. We were on track to hit that $450,000, did that $450,000+. However, we had some things happen. And I will tell you whatever you need me to tell you, what I would plan to do to rectify that, because not making that $450,000. The actual carryover, and these are our numbers and compared with Mr. Dahl's number, is this, and I'm going to start rounding to 425 on this, but you can see that's an actual number. Where the 12 cents comes from, I'm good for that 12 cents, okay? probably can find it in my pocket right now. I don't know about the $32, but the 12 cents I'm good for. We had some extenuating circumstances that were literally beyond our control, and some of them I've been talking about, and I'll look at them, and I don't want you to panic. And I'm certainly not panicking at this point, but we need to start having some discussions. We, meaning myself, Mr. Nichols, Mr. Dahl, Ms. Gillum, and probably our operations folks, because we have some concerns from the energy savings that we were, quote unquote, we'll say promised. Mr. Weaver, you and I have sat in a couple different meetings over the course of time, and but we're not seeing them. But the biggest one.
I know you've been concerned about that for
yes, sir.
Quite some time.
Yes, sir. And I understand. I understand. If we're not seeing it, hey, if we took it from you from the Board of Supervisors, we're going to make sure you have enough money to pay your bills.
But it's not a loser, though.
No, sir. We have it outlined. We have some projections as we look at the next slide, too, and a couple of slides.
And a clarification, the 427 is not a carryover. The 427 is what the balance was left that went back to fund balance.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's yeah,
it wasn't carried over to be able to spend in the following fiscal year. It went back to fund balance. That's what they returned to fund balance.
Yes, yeah. That's great. And my board does not plan on asking for that back. In the past, we've said, hey, we've $600,000.
We've already spent it.
Yeah. All right, well,
there you go.
I want it back. On August 16th, I received an email notification from the state superintendent, and also from the fiscal agents at the state level, that said they were going to change the accounting rules from the way they did sales tax, June's accelerated sales tax. We got another memo on August 28th. The actual memo came out on August 28th, the email, and if this actually is hyperlinked, and I'm sorry, I don't know how to go back, but I'll figure it out. Okay. I sent that memo right there to Mr. Nichols. I'm sure he could share it with you at another time, but I'll give you a synopsis of what this memo said. Basically, it said, unlike any other year, I know you were planning on getting June accelerated sales tax to go into the fiscal year that you're responsible for right now. We're going to move it to the next year.
And that would have been part of the 650 to 850 estimate that they were talking about.
Yes, yes. This memo came out in November. If I could go in, I can tell you the exact date of when that memo is, and it actually gave us the accounting rules. Now, at first take, you would say, great, you're going to have a windfall in FY19, but that's not the case. They're going to take accelerated sales tax from FY19, and it'll come in 20. So everything now will start moving forward. We were fortunate enough, and thanks to her infinite wisdom, to have enough money that I didn't have to come back and tell you I need $200,000 to cover that. But we did not know until August 16th that it was even what was going to happen.
Trust me, you can't gasp any more than Mr. Nichols and I did one morning when we sat down, and then he explained it to us, and basically the state has just said however much money they saved in every county that they did this to, that's how much money they pocketed for 2018 and just said, okay.
I don't know whether they kept
down,
it recovered.
Down.
Just be glad we're not Fairfax. We calculated theirs at $8 million yesterday. $8 million in June's accelerated sales tax. That's what they would get. They had to take that hit. I'm assuming they did because they have a $1 billion something dollar budget.
I think they were okay.
Yeah, I'm sure they
were
okay.
But I was at a state, a regional finance director's meeting yesterday, and I was like, I thought maybe I missed something, I didn't read something. Everybody was like, no, this was the very first time we found out about it, and there were school divisions that were in the red because of this.
And there's nothing we can do about it.
There's nothing. No. It won't happen again according to the accounting rules. We should be set
Kill
to
Jerry
move forward. Yeah. Be able to budget whatever that is.
But the state benefits by this, do they not?
They would have benefited in theory. I mean, they're not. They're.
Well, they said part of it was that when they gave you the sales tax in June, when they gave it to you in August before, they were basing it on estimates, and they didn't have real dollars. And so by doing it later, they were able to actually do it based on real dollars. So they were able to close out their books with a real number. So it could benefit you in the long run because you're getting a real number versus a.
Yeah, if they
estimate.
Do this repeatedly every year, and if they said they're going to do this,
yes, sir.
So
yes,
it'll
sir.
Always be, the June stuff will always come later.
Yes, sir.
Okay,
yes,
so
sir.
If that's the case, this is just a one-time fail for fiscal year 18. It reduced that 650 to 800 estimate down by that $200,000. That's down to the four something, and that's why the difference is. We just didn't realize the difference. So.
You wanted to know what it means in the state, Mr. Weaver? Well, we just figured out two of the how many, 96
95 counties, yeah.
95 counties, two of them, they got $8.2 million.
Yes, two of them. Now the largest one, obviously, being Fairfax.
We're
not the smallest by anything, you know. And I agree. I was just curious. I was like, I wonder how bad that affected Fairfax.
I know. We got nosy and started looking all the time.
So very simple math. If I took the 200,000 net to 400, there's six. I easily clear the 400. I did not know that when I made the presentation in June. I'm throwing it out there. This concern that I'm cursing on right here, moving the cursor around, is another one. So our baseline budget savings were projected to be 142,817. That number was taken off our budget baseline. So Ms. Gillum and I, when we looked at FY18's utility costs, overall utility costs, fuel, oil, and electric, basically, we reduced that line item, that total line item, and it was right around $1 million+ for utilities. We reduced that line item by 142,817. Okay. When all of our utilities came into play by the end of July, because we don't get all of June's bills until July, and remember, I came to you in June 6th. When we calculated it, we didn't see $142,000 in savings. We only saw 66.6, and all the way down to 4 cents. And I bet you money that's right to the penny.
Okay. Now here's my next question: the 142,817, is that given to us by train, or is that a number we can?
Okay, so we have not met, meaning myself, Mr. Nichols, or Mr. Dahl.
You know where I'm headed.
Well, it's a good question.
Yeah. So for this year, for fiscal year 18, those are not guaranteed dollars. We don't start the guarantee, but they were saying because they're implementing a lot of the energy projects during the fiscal year, that they gave us an estimate of what our savings were going to be. Now, the one thing that probably hurt the schools was they delayed the controls project at the high school. There was a delay in that, and that's what Train said was going to be a big money saving for them.
Yeah, until school's out, you know, trying to get it in there nice at the right time. We can't go back to Train for the estimated years.
Right.
Until the project started.
Which concerns me over this year. We're going to have a discussion very soon. I have the numbers on the next slide and the following numbers, next two slides, for FY19. That's my biggest concern.
But it's small potatoes.
I understand, sir. I understand.
It's what?
It's small potatoes. I mean, it literally.
I was just hoping they were going to cut us a check.
Not for this one yet, but they might. They will in the future.
Right.
When does that start?
Next year.
So as of June 30th, at the end of this fiscal year, is when we start our 1 year period for the audit period. So that's an audit, you know, to determine.
So we have to wait until then before it starts, actually, then.
Before the real numbers
the
start.
Real numbers.
Well,
so 2020 is when we should be saving that much money in 2020.
Right.
And they're on the book.
More.
Yeah.
More.
Right. Well, that's just
for schools. Unless there's something on both county or schools part that we're doing something.
We just got to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to do.
And that's the concern, is we've got to really take a look at, you know, inside schools, inside the county buildings. Have we changed something that they set that we didn't override or we modified something? Because we don't want to be too far off. Now, if you're talking about, you know, a nickel here, a nickel there, we're not too worried about it. If it's 100,000 here and 100,000 there, that's a big problem.
Yes.
So we just have to watch it through this year.
So
evidently, you didn't cut the heat on in this building because I'm cold.
And it's about
it is a little cool here, but that's why I have a jacket.
That's my work. That's why I'm sitting.
Next time I'll layer up.
Layer up.
Even Tony said, can I?
And truly, that temperature is because of the settings that are set.
I know. So.
Mr. Dahl told me to get a Snuggie, so I'll just pass that on.
He wasn't buying the Snuggie. The next piece of this is very important from my personal standpoint as I move forward with the budget, is that I come back to that number and that promise. I come back to this all the way up to that, and even in some closed-door sessions, it may have been a little bit higher than that. We addressed some needs versus wants, probably starting in March and certainly ending in April. Bought a couple more maintenance vehicles, did some things that gave out some more money, took care of all the things that we've kind of been putting down the road. If that money would have been there, we may have had an extra, I'm going to throw out $200,000. But at that particular point, I thought I was going to land somewhere in between those numbers. I had no idea that $200,000 hit was coming. If you don't mean me well enough right now, your word is my word is my bond. I told you that on June 6th when I said that. If I tell you this, I'm going to deliver, and I feel bad that I'm not delivering. I don't like excuses. That's real.
Yeah.
This is real, folks. This piece right here. Our baseline budget was cut $142,817. Now, you could look at a cut. It wasn't there, whatever. But we cut the utility cost budget by that number. When it's all said and done, by the end of July, we saw this much savings, which means we had to go back to our overall budget, whether it was instruction, personnel, and find $76,000 more. We did that. We covered it. But if I had to go back and find that money, right there, that money, I can't turn around and make that number larger.
You've already convinced the board that they know where the money went to, the $200,000.
I know that. I know that. But my next couple of slides are even more important for me.
Okay. This is a year that's done and closed.
I get it. I get it. Okay. I understand.
But let's back up one more question. The cars, the vehicles, you bought them out of operational budget last year?
We bought special ed cars, we bought special ed vehicles, we bought some operational stuff, and we bought some out of CIP.
Okay, so from a policy point of view, we're really going to have to look at that tight, because remember, we buy capital things, buses and school cars, out of the CIP budget. But if they're buying them out of the operational budget, now you've got capital stuff going on both sides, kind of like you do with the IT stuff. We're going to have to, you all, in concert with the school system, is going to have to make a decision on how you want that done.
I think
we are shooting ourselves in the foot on that if we're loading this anyway. Yeah. It's a problem.
I don't disagree with that, although I think, and you guys can correct me if I remember, discussions a couple of years ago around some of the vehicles. I mean, they were really old vehicles.
Yes,
but they could have been bought out of capital dollars.
Right. No, I understand that. The challenge there is we typically tend to underfund on the CIP budget side. Is the typical challenge that I think maybe the schools experience. So, yes, you're right. You're right.
I'm not complaining.
You're right.
I'm suggesting that if there is dollars available in their budget to buy vehicles, you all have to decide whether you want that to be spent as capital dollars or operational dollars. Because if they had excess budget money to buy that, not excess, if they had enough money in their budget to buy a couple of vehicles, we could have easily just reduced that amount, put it in the capital budget, so it would still be a capital expenditure, and they still get the cars when they want them because they happen to have some money to do it.
I understand.
You all are going to decide where you want capital things to be bought on. Do you want the county staff, if planning's got an extra $15,000 left of the year, do you want them to buy the car out of that, or do you want it bought out of the capital dollars?
Yeah.
It's not a matter of whether they should have it or not, or whatever. It's where the dollars, how they're spent on our ledger.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I'm simply pointing out that typically CIP budget has been one of the areas where
regular budget CIP.
And
budget
I'm sure it's not unique enough to our board. I think it's just one of those places where you tend to not think of it. It's an easy one to push to the next year. Mm-hmm. And this is where certainly when you talked about some of those vehicles, I remember conversations about how old those vehicles were, which is reiterating the fact that those CIP dollars were never allocated.
So, look.
Yes or no?
Chime in, because I'm just saying.
I want to chime in with a statement that you may not like here in a minute,
I'm just saying my perspective of this. Remember, you never bought a bus motor out of capital reserve maintenance fund, not in the last 7 years, until just this last year. That was always bought out of operational budgets. But now, it's not being bought out of operational budgets, it's being bought out of capital money, because you put it in the capital reserve. And the schools have been sending that bill over to this pile now when they used to pay it out of their budget.
And that's partly true, but what's happened is we decided not to, we didn't have the $20,000, so we took the bus out back in the field.
With vehicles, with capital stuff, because the CRM was never in place before. But the school's budget didn't decrease when you put the CRM in place.
And quite honestly, speaking of buses, we were talking in April about forecasting about what that number may be. I even looked to see if we could buy another school bus.
Yeah, but I think Mr. Nichols' point is a good one.
I mean, last year, we needed a couple. You did give us $200,000 back to buy a couple more through carryover.
I'd be delighted if that money, if you said, hey, you know, I'm going to have some money left at the end of the year. We've been really judicious on our budget. We want to do another bus. Can I transfer $95,000, $85,000 back to the CIP budget so you can buy us a bus? Then it would have been capital expense, not an operational expense. Only because I want to keep the money clean.
But you couldn't count it towards per pupil expenditure.
That's right. But if that's the, if that's the argument you want, then you should buy all your vehicles, and we should just put that CIP money in your operational budget. But
I'm all for that. But I understand.
The reason it changed was in 2012, the school said we never have enough money to buy buses, so the board created the capital reserve maintenance fund, and they created a standard in the tax rate amount for school buses and sheriff's vehicles.
Yes, sir.
And they were supposed to be spent specifically on that out of the tax rate, not out of regular CIP.
Yes, sir.
Every year since then, the tax rate has been tapped for the tax rate amount, except one year, I think. If the argument is that we want to increase the per pupil expenditure, then the argument can be made that all those buses and bus motors and school maintenance repairs and all that stuff should go back in the operational budget. But I'm not suggesting that I'm right one or the other. I'm just saying we should have a consistent pattern so that capital expenditures out of this and non-capital expenditures out of this. If you have money left over that you want to dedicate to a capital expenditure, it should be pulled out of operational budget and put back in a capital budget and then bought.
Just a point of clarification. Yeah. The rules for how per pupil is calculated, it takes out anything that's capital. So if you buy a bus or a car, it's not part of
Well, that's a great thing to know, because that's one of the things we've always talked about is, are we on even playing?
Their technology is different.
Yeah.
Because technology kind of straddles the fence a little bit.
Yeah, because if you're buying a couple laptops, they're not capital.
Right.
Even if you're buying 50 Chromebooks, it's really not a capital expenditure. It's just a big dollar amount.
Well, and at this day and age, it's considered an instructional material or supply.
And the supply, that's right. And that's why it really should be in your budget, but the other capital things should be pulled out. So anyway, that's a discussion during budget season. This board really needs to decide how you want to do that so that you have a consistent answer and we have a consistent answer. So anyway.
Okay, now we've cleared that up.
All right, let's go to the slide you
wanted
to show us.
Well, I do, but I want to reiterate back to that number now, and it will take me another 30 seconds, is if you took our shortfalls, this was real.
Right.
If you took our utility shortfall and added those two together, and if you added that number with our actual money that went, not carryover, went back, that would be the figure, and I would have been right at it. I wouldn't have been at 800, but I would have been right at that number.
When you talk about the shortfall in the budget, you don't know how many times I get asked this question about the different teachers. Why is it so cold? And then I go into explaining to them, because we cannot control this, because we have a guaranteed savings plan and training.
Yes.
What? Oh, okay.
We could buy Fluco sweaters for everybody,
another jacket.
I understand. A little harder though.
Not sure if they can get customized logos.
I don't want to take a pick off. I'm just saying, 71.5. I don't want to go there. So.
Okay. Special order.
Can we charge it to the CRA?
any questions about this? And again, if you want me to go back to that number and hit that number, I'll figure it out in this year's budget. But I'm telling you, it would have been there.
No, it absolutely would have, for two reasons. A, the state came, it's not there for two reasons. The state came in and said, oh, by the way, we're not going to give you the $200,000 that you normally get at that time.
That's correct. That's not revenue.
The second thing is, you spent some money on capital expenditures that normally would not have been spent there. It would have been excess money going back to fund balance. And then the savings the lack of savings in your utilities. But that's why this capital stuff we got to kind of clear up, because it's we're playing both sides.
I understand.
Let's go to the next slide there, Mr. Wayne.
All right. So as we are looking at FY20, the current year that we're in, as of November, 19. Pardon me, I'm excuse
19.
Me, 19, I'm sorry, 19, the current year that we're in, On November 20th, we've expended 36.3%. We're below percentage of where we should be at this point, 41% overall. There are some anomalies in this as far as payroll and things like that. The biggest portion of our budget overall is in payroll, about 80% of a $40 million budget.
Question about that one.
If that number is accurate, that's gone down a boatload.
That wasn't typically 85, 88%.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it as high as 84.
Yep.
I've seen it as high as 84.
The move to sort of reduce some of that too.
Yes, sir. I'm doing my best, but at the same time, we have cost of living, and I'd like to pay my employees.
I think we're changed. So we're spending on other things.
Guys,
we got five people trying to talk.
Yeah.
But they'll take turns.
Yes, sir.
Where does that percentage of payroll fall within state averages?
That's slightly below what I'm hearing.
I would think so. I mean, if you don't know the number, that's fine.
What I've been hearing.
I thought, yeah.
Typically, I've heard as high as, I've never heard higher than 85%, but it doesn't mean that's not out there from a school system standpoint. But typically, it's around between 82% and 83%. We have been as high as 84. It hasn't been for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Last year, we might have been at 79.8 or something like that, a year before. I have it on my whiteboard in my office, but I don't know what it is.
Well, since we got a bigger raise last year, that doesn't make sense to me because we got a bigger raise last year.
Yes, but the stuff that the teachers and the students use is more expensive than it used to be. We're buying lots of Chromebooks. We're buying this. So that the pay numbers didn't go down. Pay is still continuing to go up. But the other things have caught up a little bit, and so we're actually investing in some of the technology stuff. So when you put those two together, the ratio just changes.
That would be a useful number to see on that county-by-county comparison as well, too.
I'm not sure if that's readily available.
We did make some adjustments, but we made the adjustments out of necessity in 11, 12, and 13 when we went through all the RIF and RIF process.
Sure.
I mean, we were down almost 50 people at one point. All those 50 jobs are not back in the place. We have added a few of those positions back. The third bullet, not the legal fees, but the increased students in early childhood, we've had to add a teacher and two instructional assistants. Our average teacher's running us between $65,000 to $70,000. That's benefits and everything. For every $4 we spend in salary costs, we spend an additional dollar in benefits. So it's running about, again, so you have that, instructional assistance, I'm going to throw out a number, $30,000 probably with benefits and everything, something in there, $25,000 to $30,000. So there's additional $100,000 that we've had to come up with, and we have no choice. If the kids are here from a special ed standpoint, they dictate the staff that you have to have. If you're going to make personnel cuts, it has to come where you're not outside of what's called SOQ, standards of quality.
I would tell you one number that I would love to see one time.
Yes?
It's a CSA bill for each area around here. Because that was one of the things I was talking with some of the, when I was in the Education Steering Committee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Their numbers were as small or smaller than ours in far bigger counties. Is it just because we're having an influx of kids moving in, or that's something that I just the number.
It seems that way when we look at our special ed population, particularly the special ed population that have more severe from a disability standpoint, whether they're emotional, mental trauma, and you'll see in some later slides we're looking at 20. That we need some more help from a mental health standpoint and a special ed standpoint. That's our largest area as far as the growth.
That would be another thing would be if we just get comparison.
Well, there's a mandate on that, isn't there?
There's all types of mandates.
Right. So you don't have a choice.
Right here, our earlier childhood numbers. Yeah. When our numbers hit this, you have to hire another teacher.
Yeah.
You can't say, I'm sorry, kids, you can't come.
So I don't know.
When
it's a mandate.
I understand that. I'm trying to figure it out.
If we have 26,000 residents and we pay $1 million a year, and somebody else has 52,000 residents and they pay half a million dollars a year, that's an anomaly. Why would they pay less when they have more people?
That's
one of the reasons, maybe, I've always heard since I've been here, is that if you need services, move to Flavanna.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but people shop
and
around. We'll look at the numbers and see.
When I was asking questions there, I mean,
I will tell you, one of the things we hear repeatedly is if your child needs some kind of mental health services, they're typically not available in the community, and people have to travel to Albemarle and Charlottesville, and they have great difficulty even getting appointments. So if you think about you're not treating those things early on, then they're going to manifest and cause bigger problems down the road, and that could be part of the issue.
And I'm not trying to point a finger anywhere. Like, he said it better than he knew what I was talking about. You know, just comparing and contrasting us with Salisbury County and everybody else. You know, because one of the counties that I talked to was 42,000 people, or 40-some-thousand people, and they were 500,000 on the CSA budget. I was like, what? And it's like, we're 3.15 or something.
Make up other
the
kids.
The only thing is,
we
were talking to a supervisor. Most supervisors don't know the numbers
very
well.
That's right, because 500,000 and 1542 is like
impossible.
Impossible.
Yeah. Well, so we'll pull the numbers.
He could have been the wrong number, but I'm telling you, that became...
We know that, don't we? We can definitely pull that, so.
Are they doing something that we're not doing?
Well, when you go back to that slide that has the per pupil expenditure, I guarantee you that Charlottesville and Albemarle school counselor ratios are way lower than ours are, way lower. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
Well, the places that we send money to, I'm just thinking about it. Bayou is one of them. You know,
the question's been asked a lot of times over the last few years. If you could get them there, I know they're difficult to recruit, but if the school got four new psychiatrists, psychologists, mm-hmm. school counselors, would that make a difference? And do you have the capacity to retain kids and do stuff in schools if you had that? Because I know they're hard to get, but maybe it's not even something you all would want.
We would have the program space for some of our students right now, and it wouldn't necessarily be, it would be more behavior specialists. We had an autism program last year. You're looking at very specific learning disabilities, whether it be emotionally disturbed, severe and profound, those type of things. If it wouldn't be at Abrams, we would have, I think, some capacity to increase the programs that we're able to offer some of the students that we're outsourcing for right now. Fluvanna is a part of a regional special ed program. It's called PREP, Piedmont Regional Educational Program. We outsource, what check did we send to PREP last year? How much money did we send to PREP? I'm not holding on to it. It was over $1 million, wasn't it?
It was close to it.
Okay. So we're sending $1 million to PREP to outsource special education services. Students by Ivy Creek, our autism students, are hearing impaired, are visually impaired.
OTPT.
OTPT, occupational therapy, physical therapy. If we had the staff on hand, we could save some money. We could save some money. The problem is for those very specialized services, it's almost cheaper to outsource because there's safety in numbers. There's safety in numbers. We have 20 out-of-county placements right now?
Maybe closer to 30.
Okay. All right. So somewhere between 20 to 30 out-of-county placements, meaning Chuck has a disability that requires him to be out-of-county placed. The majority of those we would request CSA funds for. Best case scenario, we draw five of those kids back, probably. Mm-hmm. And would we have a classroom space? Depending on their disability, yes. But you're looking at least a teacher and at least two instructional assistants. So
$125,000,
$150,000. Yeah. Where you might be spending probably $300,000 to $400,000 outsourced.
That's kind
of, you got transportation involved in that too.
And I wasn't questioning where we're spending.
And I didn't take it that way.
I think we might be an inordinate amount.
Well, this addresses some of Mr. Weaver's question about potential consolidation and regionalization. That may be what they're doing by hiring more in-house. We're looking at all that.
We'll find out where the money's going.
Right.
That's what you've got to have inside involvement.
Yeah, but I'm just asking what's the best thing for that kid and that family? If it's possible to do it local, is that the best thing? I don't know. And if it is a good thing, do you have the capacity to do it? And if it is, and if you do have the capacity and it's a good thing, is there a test way we could do it 1 year, or you know, hire a contract, whatever, for a two-year contract or something. I don't know. I'm just asking.
You know what cost us a lot when we send kids away?
Sure.
Sure.
Absolutely.
That's the big.
Yeah,
that's
without
the
question.
Or additional services.
Daycare is bad enough, but residential is really expensive. Yeah.
Additional services.
But we could bring some children into a program in school, but then the family would go to you know where. So we still would have a messed up situation because you don't change, you would change
well,
the environment.
Part of the thing is, though, is if you're not sending a child out of county, you don't have to have transportation to send them out of county. So you're saving some time and effort and back and forth and stuff, too, and even risk. Putting a kid in the car and driving them 40 miles a day, you know, during rush hour traffic is an extra risk.
Paying for a car driver. Mm-hmm.
Right. You have the car driver, you have fuel costs.
And you can't use SUVs.
You have a car.
You have kids. So, I mean, there's so many rules.
I
have
a car.
We'll look.
Yeah, I don't have that.
That's a budget thing we can pull. That's no problem.
Yeah.
That's one of those, that's freedom of information.
Well, no, I just have to send an email to any of the county administrators. They'll give me the number.
We probably already have that.
We can pull off their CAFRs. So, yeah, we can pull off their CAFRs.
All right. Okay, the last thing that I'm concerned about as I look at the current year that we're in, and I'm not trying to beat this to death. I'm really
yes,
not.
You are.
It's truly the, well, but
it's
I have
just,
no
it's real.
But it's real now. It's real, and it's going to hit us even more.
Yeah.
So this was the reduction in our baseline budget, this exact number.
For a whole year.
For this year. Mm-hmm. For this year.
Last year, you said we did it for a partial year.
No, that was for a full year last year, too, because this is the savings are escalating because the things got in place.
That's correct.
So these are the escalating.
Controls went into place in March of 2018. Mm-hmm. So they've been in place since March. Okay? So this was our budget. So this is our budget reduced by this amount. Again, remember I said it was over a million here? Right there. Okay? So we took that amount, we reduced it, came up with this amount. But the actual cost was this. All right? We saw this savings. That was it. We found $76,000 in other money and moved it. Ms. Gillen reappropriated it. Could have been from instruction. More than likely, it was from operational costs somewhere, okay? This past year, our baseline budget, from a utility standpoint, that's how we have to treat it, was reduced this amount. If you look at the template, so we have budgeted this amount. We're going to run out when?
March.
In March. When we look at what we're projecting, is this is how much we're going to spend. Folks, I've got utility bills. We're not going to save if our controls are in place in April of 2018. Everything's in place of April 2018. How much money are we going to spend in April 2019?
Well,
more than likely the same amount of money.
One good thing is the futures for fuel oil is down from where it was last year. So
they have contracts already in place with the
Yeah, we have
fixed
a contract
costs.
For this year with fixed costs.
Fixed
we're
yeah,
we're
fixed
currently
costs,
bidding next year.
Extremely low. If
yeah.
if I told you what I bought fuel oil and gasoline, you'd be like, can
you
I get some?
Years.
So we can't change those numbers on the
But
fly.
Our numbers, what we pay,
costs,
are actually
really
scheduled
really
to go up 8%?
This, from 18 to 19, they went up 8%. And we're currently in the process of bidding for 20 and 21. And we're in this time we're doing a regional bid with Albemarle and some other counties to hopefully get the cost even lower.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we're working on that right now.
Foster Fuel mainly.
Foster does propane, James River.
James River.
Does petroleum.
Right.
Mansfield for, do we use Mansfield for
We gas? Did before, we're not anymore from Mansfield. We did a 3-year lock a couple of years ago. I'll just give you an example of diesel fuel, and I think this number is accurate. We locked in at diesel fuel at $1.37 a gallon 3 years ago. You can't buy that today, but it's up. So and it's up about 9 cents.
Generators and buses.
Right. Yeah,
so
buses
so
run
when we say utility costs here, we're strictly talking about gasoline and
fuel oil and electricity.
And electricity.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't so
and
part of this
be
for covered under the plan by
oh,
it, it will
when
be
it, starts.
It will be in the future when it starts.
Yeah.
I completely understand why you as a county would cut that number. You're scheduled to see these savings. If you're going to see them, you don't need the money to turn on your lights.
The thing that this informs, though, is that we need to do some really, really careful looks between now and next June, because when it starts the official clock next June, July 1st, we want to make sure that we haven't goofed something up and we haven't just had settings wrong. So we need to do a, kind of an inspection on ourselves, all county and school buildings, because when they actually start counting, we want them to be on the hook. But if they're not on the hook because we changed the settings and the fuel costs didn't go down appropriately, then they're not going to have to cover it. And they're going to try to find stuff like that.
Yeah, who's monitoring all of that?
Savannah County Public Schools.
I mean,
Mr. Wills has all the controls for us.
Yeah, but Train is, I mean, we're paying them a maintenance fee under which they run these things.
And
I would assume that those things, that they would alert us in advance that we are not in line with the expected cost.
Let Eric tell you.
So when we set up with this contract, they have access to our bills. They can get all of our bills. They've got access to go to Dominion, to Central, CVEC, or whatever, and they can access those bills to see if there's any anomalies with them. Mm-hmm. So
if they see an anomaly, it's in their interest to tell us as soon as possible, because if they think it's going to be a cost for them, they want to get it fixed. If they find out that it's not a cost for them, it's just us screwing up, at least we'll know. But anything that's not on track, they're going to cover.
But a more basic example is, let's say that, you know, the contract calls for the thermometers to be set at 71 degrees. You know, they would know that a thermometer's been changed and now set at 75 degrees. And they would have to tell us that. They can't just come back and say, oh, well, you changed the thermometers. We didn't alert you.
They have evidence to show you that. So. It's especially important in the big systems that cover lots of square footage space. Like there's a system for this building. In that building over there, it's a little different because there's small split units or small home-style heat pumps for different phases in the office. But our thermostats are still preset to go up and go down. When I get in here in the morning, when I'm here at 6:30, my office is cold because the temperature doesn't come up until 7:30 or 8:00.
Have a heat on your
neck? Nope, I gave it to Jennifer Edwards for her office because she said she's cold. She's cold. Okay. But honestly, the thermostats are set, so they automatically go down and up. But the big systems like a high school or other schools where it's one system that controls the whole system, those are the ones where the big dollars are, and Train's going to be on those like white on rice.
Well, I can assure you, I was at the high school for a CTE meeting, and the air conditioner went off when yes. It was supposed to, because
right.
It got hot and we got out of there.
You go past 10 o'clock at night in here, we've tried to adjust it so it works on board
right.
Nights, but it gets hot and stuffy in here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, and
it's cool. I think
now,
it's working.
Drop. Yeah, well, that's true.
I was gonna say, there's a lot
especially
of
over here.
Hot iron here.
County attorney's been going on and on all night long. So.
Within the energy ESCO, there's a 25% grace period, if you will, or a grace amount, which basically allows us to extend for basketball games and sporting events. So that's all factored in there as well. Again, I wanted to put this on because this was money that the school system had to come up with from another pot to pay for. Again, our budget, and I don't want to use the term reduced because our budget was increased, and I completely understand that. But in theory, our baseline utility budget was reduced, and I'm going to round it to 290. So at the beginning of this year, we took our checkbook and we put that amount in there. Okay? When we look at our bills for the remainder of this year, where they are to this point, remainder of this year, we're saying they're going to come to that amount. If you look, there's that potential savings, basically that's that minus that, I mean this minus that, and it comes to this. It tells me that I'm going to have to come up with $185,000 from my existing FY19 number somewhere, and pay that bill. Now, I believe we'll be able to do that. I believe we'll be able to do that because I don't think our budget's going to be 0.5% left remaining that we would argue whether or not it goes to carryover or goes back to fund. I don't think so. But I know one thing, if I'm at 1% at $400,000 next year, it's going to be in large part because there's a 0.5% right there that I didn't get budgeted for. That's the only piece that I'm telling you. And Train is not on the hook for this. Who's on the hook for this number right here, and who was on the hook for that number right here? Were you and I. Mm-hmm. Were you and I. But more so us to try to keep it. We've done everything we can. Our patrols are in place. I think we need to sit down with Train ASAP. There's some discussions that I have had with them, and they say, we never guaranteed you dollars. Mr. Weaver, I know that's a lie, and I told them that, because you and I sat and heard dollar figures.
Sure did.
I know that. I know that, sir. I know exactly where you sat. I know the exact room and everything. I can't tell you what we had for lunch that day, but usually I can. All right. But I know where we sat, and they talked. This has a 15-year payback at $500-some thousand a year. The schools was responsible for about $475. And you all were going to see, from a county perspective, about $100.
Surely in that contract.
It's in the contract, but they say the contract's in kilowatt usage and overall energy usage. They say there's, we didn't give you a dollar figure, so we'll have to have that. That's a discussion for another day.
Because when that price goes up,
They've got escalation built in for fuel costs.
They have price escalation in there. Right.
It is not a straight dollar for dollar thing. It is in actual energy usage.
Right.
And so there could be some catastrophic increases in fuel costs that is not attributed in the contract we have with them. There is an escalation. It's about 3% or whatever from year to year. So there is an escalation. But if it's actually going up 8% a year, then we may be off. So the savings may not be as big. But they're guaranteeing using this many kilowatts, forget everything else, this many kilowatts, versus what we were using was this many kilowatts. Mm-hmm. That's what they're guaranteeing.
Right.
And
right.
If when that translates into dollars, however it does, for school system and county, we understand we're on the hook.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
My point on this one, and you made it, is that if you have $400,000 left at the end of this next year that you didn't need for operations, just because you manage your budget well and you're never going to spend it to zero, that's too risky. But then the we don't have to go pull more money to cover that thing because it'll be covered out of the $400,000.
Right.
And only $200,000 would go back to fund balance instead of $400,000.
That's correct. And you have promised me that if I do get to that, zero, I'm like, it's right there, black and white and red now. All right. So when we look at next year in the 20, this, we use the 3% increase because that's what the ESCOs have used. Mr. Nichols was absolutely right. We're saying it's going to be this. We're only scheduled to see an additional, but I don't know how. I'll know at the end of the year what we hit. 12,000? I'm not worried about 12,000. I am worried about 185. Make sense? That's my biggest concern this year from a budgetary standpoint.
And we watch it every month. We're looking at the kilowatt use and, we're watching it every single month.
Mr. Weaver, you should be on the school board because these guys love that utility stuff too.
My school board feels exactly the same way. Mr. Nichols is like, okay, but what they heard is, if you need it, come and tell us. I'm coming to tell you.
Yeah, I got to say, there's not a decision for y'all to pinky swear about. There's a young lady sitting back here, and there's a bunch of pinky swears on that one.
Yeah. Right. I just wanted to make sure she heard it.
Oh. Well, she'll wake up in a minute.
Our unknowns, now that we're looking at 20, our unknowns right now are insurance rates. Quite honestly, I believe our insurance rates are going to remain the same. If anything, I'm hopeful, and this is something I am hopeful about, that we may be able to see a small decrease in premiums based on things, but it's too early. As you know, we ventured out back into a self-insurance consortium model this year with BPA. We don't have any real solid numbers right now, so when you see the next slide or the slide after this, it talks about what our insurance rates are going to be. Last year at this time, I think we were looking at a 13% increase, several hundred thousands of dollars. I'm hoping it's zero. I'm hoping it's zero.
One thing to think about is ours is not going to be zero because we have our experience rating is particularly not good. There's several cases that are very expensive cases that just are there. You don't have a choice. But if there is any moderation on the school side, we might want to this year take a really careful look on what the benefit is that the county offers and the benefit that the schools offer, because we're both on Cigna now, both have a bunch of plans and lots of things, but it's always been a little bit separate. If there's a chance financially to bring it closer together, it might be good to look at that. We may not be even close to that, but if, for instance, if we pay $500 and the schools pay $495, well, maybe we can raise the schools to pay $500 too, so that we're closer, so that we have end up with a consistent. If you work for the county of Savannah in any capacity, here's what we pay for toward the plan.
Sure.
But anyway, we could look at it and see what the numbers are. Because you're on Cigna now too, and us, we can do some comparisons.
And we're actually meeting with those folks, our insurer, third-party administrator, tomorrow in Roanoke. I don't know if the county is interested. I know if to talking with them, but kind of partnering up, see what if they could do something from the county. Obviously, we're a much bigger fish.
Yeah, we will gladly do it, and we would join that pool. We just can't do it this year.
I completely understand.
But we are certainly thinking towards trying to get in that pool if it makes sense. Now, our third-party benefits advisor is not real thrilled about that pool, but we're looking at all kinds of other avenues to see what other people think about it. So.
I understand completely. Mm-hmm. I know who your third-party person is. I understand completely. Again, I'm not beating the dead horse. We're not sure about utility and fuel costs, what's going to happen. We're projecting a 3% increase.
So utility and fuel costs might be an issue for the school system.
I get the feeling it's an electrifying issue.
I want to know that, so.
It's an electrifying issue.
You can poke and I'm showing you real
I'm
numbers.
I'm shocked.
state budget allocations, it's an unknown. You'll see a number that's projected in the governor's budget here in just a second. For example, last year we had some standards of quality positions that they were looking at, and I think there was some $700,000 that may be increased. And I said, well, that's going to be offset if those SOQs come to fruition. The big talk still remains in guidance counselors, so if they increase the SOQ, I don't anticipate that being an unfunded mandate. Another example with that would be if the governor's budget goes through the way it was proposed last spring at 3%, how much money that will actually be. If they change the total allocation of what they give for an elementary teacher or a secondary teacher, if they raise that amount, that will change our state budget allocation. And then the cost of living, the unknown, is it going to be around 2%? Is it going to be a little bit higher than that? Are we able to match that and give it to our employees, much like I know you would like to give it to your employees? I don't want you to be shocked by these numbers, but because these numbers are estimates. This first one is, for the most part, right off the state template. We ran the numbers. The governor, when he ended the budget session last year, proposed in his budget, threw out a 3% increase for all staff, effective July 1, 2019, which would be FY20. There was some talk today in some of the finance meetings that raise may actually go into effect January 1 of 20, but that's not in the governor's budget. We ran the numbers for all of our staff, and that's what would have cost us, around $850,000. But remember, their numbers are only for standards of quality positions. So in the governor's template, it's 375 and change. But it's right at 375, which would mean to give a 3% raise, if that comes to fruition, it's going to cost around 475 to do it, local, federal, anything else, any other place we can draw the money.
I love how they're allowed to say we're going to give it to everybody.
Yeah.
And our share is.
But we don't really mean everybody.
Right. The biggest player in that is teachers, and you know from our meetings that what that is. So I gave you a number from a teacher standpoint a little while ago about what it cost us. A brand new teacher is costing us about $65,000, assuming they get health insurance with us, right? The state gives us for a brand new, and I'm going to round just a little bit, but it's pretty close. The state gives us for an elementary teacher $50,000. That's benefits, VRS, everything. So if they're saying you need 10 elementary teachers, you get $500,000. When in reality, it cost us $650,000. So the locality has to come up with $150,000 or something else, and any raise on top of that. They're going to give 3% on the 50, not 3% on the 65. Mm-hmm. But we have to give 3% on the 65. That's why that number is misleading.
That's mandated then?
Yes, if they would mandate it. Okay. It'll be an all or nothing if it comes from the governor that way. It'll be you take it and you do it, or you won't. I'm not sure whether it'll be an average, because it hasn't gone through anything. House, Senate, right? We don't have the governor's budget, probably be middle of December, late December.
Yeah, he always does it right before Christmas.
Right. Early gift, so yeah. We'll be monitoring that. As it comes in, I'll be in communication with Mr. Nichols and Mr. Dahl and say, hey, here's what we're looking at as of right now. I'm hoping this number, this question mark, turns to a zero, The staffing piece here, we have to address some of our needs, our growing enrollment at the high school. This is a high school person, high school, high school, high school, across the division. That's that mental health piece. This is the CTE, the apprentice coordinator. That's more of a wish versus a need. Right now, in all of her spare time, and she has a lot of it, Ms. Gillum kind of handles most of our CTE aspects, but she does not have time. And this is going to become a mandate, I think, more sooner than later under profile of a graduate, for us to begin to offer these apprenticeship programs, to work with our local, you know, businesses and other folks to make that happen. We just don't have the staff to do it. We can hand it to an AP, go to the assistant principal at the high school, but I'm guessing they're not sitting around doing this a whole lot, too. I've been an assistant principal. You don't have a lot of time to do that. We have some special ed needs, particularly at the high school, but also at the lower level. You saw that ECSE, which is early childhood special ed. Total of staffing needs, and that's an approximate number. I should have put an asterisk beside that. In theory, ladies and gentlemen, we could offset that a little bit if we raised our ratios at the K-3 level and we met true SOQs. But I don't think my board's willing to go down that road.
What would that amount to if you did increase that ratio?
I'll give you an example right
now. From what to what?
I'll give you an example right now. So it's 9.6, how many funded positions we get for kindergarten. 9.6 SOQ positions, all right? So we'll round it to 10. There were 220 kids that came to us from kindergarten this year. And the state's giving us money for 10 teachers, which means 220 divided by 10 is 22 kids in a classroom. As a school board, as a superintendent, as a past primary principal, I'm going to advocate, go ahead and put 22 kids in a kindergarten classroom and see.
Try it.
Yeah, try it. Yeah.
And then we'll allow all the board of supervisors and the school board to go in there and teach it.
Then you'll need more mental health services.
But in theory, yes, you will. Yeah, on both sides. Yeah. Kids and adults. You could cut two teachers from a kindergarten. You could do the same thing in first grade. You could probably do the same thing in second grade and still be under, believe it or not, what the SOQ and the state mandates. I'm in the education business, sir. It does not mean I have to understand finance. We have to understand finance. We have to be able to work within the numbers. It doesn't mean it's the right thing to do.
Well, would aids be cheaper if you cut an aid in with people who have 22?
Yeah, but again, once again, you're not mandated to do that. You're not mandated in the kindergarten until you go over 24-1. The state says 24-1.
All if you can afford it.
Exactly.
I think the SOQ only has about 3 aides on it. Yeah, for
that's
band.
Correct.
They have aides in kindergarten.
Right. We have approximately 70 instructional assistants in this division, and thank you all so much for helping support that. The state says we need 3. That's how much funding we get. 3. Then they're all special ed related, by the way. No, I take that back.
There's one in kindergarten
for the 9.3.
Are you school camp? You said school camps versus high school.
Mm-hmm. Across the division, there's some talk of it going from 400 to 250. Am I right on those numbers?
There is some talk of that.
Are they trained in mental health? I heard that they want to give school counselors a different job description.
That's right. They're going from that to counselor or whatever the case may be.
From guidance counselor to school counselor.
But what the big push is also not only to lower that pupil-teacher ratio, mm-hmm. but also to pull them out of and literally have them doing mental health and counseling responsibilities. Right now, we have them doing anything from covering classes to performance lessons, which is wonderful, mm-hmm. but can we get back to this? And that's a push I get from the counselors and our teachers and our parents. Mm-hmm. I'd like to have a counselor versus another teacher here. We need the teacher, too, to get it. Again, math, 975. Technology, Chromebooks, this number is just because these things are slowly becoming outdated. And this number is not in the CIP. The CIP number includes actual infrastructure next year. We have to do something with our servers. We're going to have to do something with our servers. They're just becoming antiquated. Any questions on this slide? I realize, I'm glad you're sitting down, Mr. Weaver.
What's the bottom line there?
Well, we didn't bottom line it because that's, that's kind of an exercise in futility at this point. Because
yeah.
The school board has asked us to continue to look at all of our programs. If you'll, this next slide, here are some other things that we would love to be able to do. We haven't given our, it's really tough to find a substitute. Let me come in, particularly if I don't have a degree, and I'm willing to come in for $65 a day. I don't know if any of you have all ever been in a classroom, but that's not a lot of money from a substitute teacher standpoint to go in there for 7 hours and put up with our little chairs. We have great kids, but substitute teaching is a tough job. We'd like to be able to up the money. That would change it to, I think I ran the numbers on it, to right around $100 a day to go
so
from around 70 to 100.
Do you pay a substitute with a degree more?
Yes, 75 versus 65. And long-term subs a lot more than that. But that means they're responsible for everything. They become the teacher. Compensation for team leaders. These are folks, these are teachers, staff that are going above and beyond. They're organizing meetings. They're planning agendas. They're doing work in the summer. Not that all of our teachers aren't doing that, but there's additional responsibilities on top of that. And this is about, we have about 40 folks across the division out of our 280 teachers that we consider leaders, if you will. So that's an additional $1,000. That's what we came up with.
They're not compensated.
They are not right now. They are not. They're
okay.
Not. A dedicated homebound teacher, there's an asterisk because there'd be a lot of offset cost. We spend around $50,000, approximate figure, right now on homebound cost. Currently, if we had a dedicated teacher and we have trouble finding homebound teachers as well, it really wouldn't cost that much more money. It's just trying to say, let's just earmark $70,000 in our budget and hire one teacher and quit trying to find that person.
And a homebound teacher is when a kid is ill and can't get to school.
That's
yes.
Correct. Yeah.
And
that
doctor, psychiatrist, they mm-hmm. teach them at home.
Yes. Yeah. Or there may be some other reasons why they have to be homebound. For the most part, it comes on that aspect.
Yeah.
If you look at what we're spending right now in FY19, $70 per student from an instructional standpoint, we give that to our schools to spend on their kids directly. This money goes directly to the students in one way or another from the school division. We would like to up that. For every $10 we would add to it, it'd be about $35,000. I know this is a commitment from the board standpoint, but they realize what it has a cost associated with it. This is a huge unknown. If you look at the First Lady, Ms. Northrum, she's bringing this back. There hasn't been a push from the preschool initiative since Governor Kane. I don't know how much, it's got wheels right now. I just don't know if it's going to gather traction once it gets into the General Assembly. We have 4 pre-K teachers right now, and there's matching funds for those folks. If the First Lady has her way, they want to offer preschool to all kids. I would absolutely love that from a primary background. But again, if there's 220 kids, you'd want to have the same kind of ratio. We'd have to hire 8 more teachers. So the state better come up with some money for that to happen. This, we've already had to hire our early childhood special ed. This is a no choice. If the kids are there, if you find them, it's called child find. We have that a couple of times a year, particularly in the spring. If the students are there through a child find activity that we do, we have to educate them if they have a special ed label. And that label can happen as early as 2. So we start serving students at 2 years old. We had to add a teacher and 2 aides this past year to serve our students, our special needs students. This is another CTE program build out that we're talking about doing, bringing ag back to the classroom. What do we have at the middle school? We have engineering.
Business,
kind of a modified home ec.
Yeah.
Home ec. We don't have shop anymore, right?
Computer concepts.
Yeah, that
right.
Falls under the business.
Right, falls under business, computer concepts, engineering.
What we kind of talked about is we don't really have any of those kind of hands-on classes
right.
for kids that might be more interested in outdoor activities or carpentry type things. We don't have any of that at the middle school at this time. And you know, back in the day, we did. We had the tech ed shops, and we don't have those anymore.
So we're just estimating startup fees being as low as 20 and no higher than 100, depending on how robust we can make the program. Meaning, do we all go all the way to a greenhouse? These type of programs typically have modules, agriculture models, farm animal models, welding, small engines. Plus the teacher, again, that figure being right around 65,000. The mental health support, this is across the division. If I had my way, I'd times that by five and have one of those in every school. And one of them, you'd be at 450. But I would love to be able to find the funds to have that person there. The hard part for Savannah, believe it or not, is going to be actually finding the person. Because they can make, I won't say twice as much, but easily 20 to 25% more somewhere else in a larger division. And sometimes doing extra things. We'd like to continue to expand and support our extracurricular activities from field hockey's in here, some more support for the band, possibly paying our bus drivers a little bit more that are doing our field trips, our sports trips, and things like that. Any questions?
You're at 7 cents now. Just so.
So I do want to
make it
because last
please.
Year,
please, about 5 cents.
Last
sold.
Year we present this so early. We present this so early, and we don't have a governor's budget. What we've given you are all the things that the school board is considering. We're
yes.
not saying that we're going to come to you in February and say we want all of this funded. And that's what scares me when we do this presentation. That's why there's no dollars at the bottom
you're
there.
You're supposed to come to us and tell us your needs. And that's what you do, I think, with the first thing. You're telling us this. But when you come back, you've narrowed that.
Yeah, we're going to look at that governor's template. We're
going
to talk to our board. Where are their priorities? And really try to come down to what that might be.
Right.
But we're not saying we're going to come to you
yes.
with all of this.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Any other questions on this particular slide? And that basically, I mean, I thank you so much for your time. It really is a pleasure to work with you. I appreciate our relationship. I look forward to coming back. I believe it's in February and bringing the board back and working together. But I'll be glad to come back at any time and try to address any questions. We're starting back up our school tours. Thank you so much, Ms. Eager. I know you try to attend those. There's one tomorrow, I believe, that Mr. Stribling is going to be handling. I don't know if you got the invite. I'm inviting you now. So, but certainly you're all welcome to come to those. I love to showcase the many wonderful things that our teachers are doing, our staff are doing, more importantly, our kids are doing, and that's in large part because of your support. I know it's a lot of money, and I know we have our banter over those utility costs. I just wanted you to see them. I don't want to be sitting before you in June and say, by the way, I'm going to need money because I'm $200,000 short in utility costs. I don't think I'm going to be there, but I do believe those costs are going to be short on our end. We're going to try to find the money somewhere else. 19 is tighter. It just is. It's tighter. We've gone through the gains and the progress that we have made, and she doesn't like it. Mr. Breslauer hated it even more. I'm a very quick math person, but I round a lot. You know, like boom, 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 boom. If we added $1 million, we better have gotten $1 million more in our budget. It's as simple as that. If we were able to give $400,000 back, okay, then we could do $1 million forward in theory and still come to zero. But I don't want to be at zero, so I got to figure out what that number is. Just a quick look, when we looked at our payroll went up over $1 million. I'm thinking, did that consume our budget? Well, no, because we got some additional offsets for that too. Again, I'm just grateful. I'm just grateful for your time. Do you have any more questions for me? And thank you so much, Ms. Gillum. And I don't know if any of my board members spoke in, but Ms. Johnson, I don't want to put you on the spot. Do you want to say anything?
I absolutely do, and I say it every time. Please don't think we are just asking for more and more and more. We are looking at expenses all the time to see what needs have changed, how we can reallocate what we have. We are always working to make the best use of the funds that we have.
And I would reiterate that. I mean, we just as long as Liz was on that second to the last page, there's a list of potential cuts. I don't like to start with cuts, but how valuable. You weigh the effectiveness of that program. We have to. Are we getting our money's worth, if you will? Any other thing?
What time is the tour?
Mr. Stribling, what time is the tour and where is it tomorrow? You're handling that for me, right, sir?
10 o'clock, starting at West Central. Then we'll do Central, and then we'll move to Perrysburg.
Are you going to be able to make it, Ms. Eager?
I'm going to try.
Will you be sure not to start unless you find out Ms. Eager's going to make it for me, sir?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Let me just double check on
Ms. Eager, I got his phone number, so we can
I'll be in Roanoke. I'm leaving literally as soon as we, I'm headed to Roanoke. So.
Tonight?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, yes, ma'am. We have an 8:30 meeting.
That's why he's talking fast.
Pardon me?
That's why he's talking fast. He's got dinner reservations.
I do not have dinner reservations. I reached out to try to see if they would buy us dinner, and I said no, so it's McDonald's tonight. She's fine.
Yeah. Very good.
Thank you all so much. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you.
So I will be quicker than Mr. Winkler. So just one quick note here. If you see at the bottom, what I put in front of the board is a draft CAFR, and it's pretty much the final CAFR before Robinson, Farmer, and Cox comes back here to present, which is me at the next board meeting. And then
it'll be in your board package next time, but we wanted you to have an advance.
That's basically the final copy, just
the
printed copy.
What goes in the board package.
Well, like I said, we'll get the binded book. It'll be a big book. okay, so I guess the first thing to look at for fiscal year, and we should have said fiscal year 20 revenue outlook, is how aggressive does the board want us to be when we're estimating our revenues for the next budget year. So for fiscal year 19, we already did an aggressive review of a lot of the revenues that we budgeted for. So. From that standpoint, you know, we can always get a little more aggressive, but then we get to the point of, you know, we may not meet the mark on what we budgeted for revenues to match up to our expenditures. So that's one thing that we're going to have to take into consideration. Also, likely some CVEC new construction revenue from them building out the broadband expansion. The one thing to remember with that, though, is for the first 5 years, why they build that out and the new revenues coming in, it's going to be funneling back through.
The first 500,000.
Yeah, the first 500,000 to go back to them.
I thought it was 350.
No, 375 is what we paid up in front. Cash, sir, and 500,000 in tax rebate.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So
then that'll all flow through the EDA.
I mean, so as far as revenue goes for the fiscal year 20 budget, I mean, the main thing that we're obviously going to have is as we do with everything, real estate taxes. Obviously, we're going to see some increases from reassessments going up. You know, on average, about 4% or something like that. Yeah, 4%. So, I mean, you know, we'll see an increase in revenues from that. But, I mean, everything else, when I look at all of our other revenues, remember, out of our budget, out of the general fund budget, about 70% of those dollars for the general fund comes from tax values.
But that rate's going to be adjusted, Dan. If it's 4% increase, then you're going to adjust it back down.
Going to be an equalized rate, but then just because it's equalized, I mean, the board then has to decide what do they want to do with the rate at that point. That is the starting point. Yep. Yes. Yep. So that's really it on the revenues. Like I said, you know, we'll find out more once we get into it, once we start loading in things, but you know, pretty much, for instance, cost recovery. We've kind of hit our plateau for the revenue we're going to get on the cost recovery program. I don't think we're going to see any, you know, major increases from this point going forward. We'll probably see maybe 100,000 increase in sales tax revenue. That's just,
And that won't keep on forever.
No, that's just an off-the-cuff estimate. And I mean, those have been our biggest revenue increases from the non-taxable revenues that we've had. So,
but if business
increases, yes, then we will.
You should, and that's what the whole objective of this water line.
It is.
Right, but the sales tax increases have been really aggressive the last 2-3 years. Come from the state, it's been fantastic. But remember, you got that increase gets up to where people's spending ability is. And unless their spending ability goes up, then you're kind of plateau.
Yeah.
And so we're worried about that because it was a pretty sharp increase in sales tax receipts. It probably won't continue to increase that sharply. When we add more economic development businesses and things here, absolutely, there'll be additional spending ability in our county that equates to taxes in our county.
I mean, so we're saying we have 100,000 for this coming.
That's just
think so.
That's just off the cuff, yeah. You know, but yeah. Complete guesstimate right now. Yeah. No, not a promise at all.
That's not even a pinky swear.
No. So what are going to be some costs coming up? Obviously, the JRWA project cost increases, and Mr. Nichols
we'll
could...
We'll talk a little bit about that later on tonight, but you've already seen some of the figures. It's going to be a fair amount just because of the long-term delays of trying to get the last permit. And so there are costs that we put on your fund balance last year as our share and Louise's share. So it's been identified, but we need to make sure that we understand that because it's costs you're going to have to pay. You don't have a choice.
Central Virginia Regional Jail, so they gave us a forecast of what current budget is, which was for fiscal year 19, $1.2 million. And Robinson, Farmer, and Cox did a forecast of what they're projecting for future years and what those contributions for counties are. Now, obviously, until we get the final CVRJ budget for fiscal year 20, but just an off-the-cuff estimate from what they were looking at from some of their forecasting, they were showing, what was it, a $1.6 million budget for fiscal year 20, and we're at 1.24 for fiscal year 19. So that's, almost a $400,000 increase.
And remember, they've stopped using fund balance so much because we had a bunch of fund balance. They used it for 2 or 3 years to kind of cover the county so they didn't have to increase so much. Now it's going to be leveled out, and the cost is going to be based on actual operational costs going up, not just pulling from fund balance. So it's going to be, we're going to get a bite this year. It may not be a full $400,000, but we're going to get a bite this year.
Yeah. In addition, remember we had the next generation 911 system. We're going to see some costs for that, nominal $12,000 a year, but it still affects the overall budget. Then again, whatever, we're going to have that first $375,000 that payment to the EDA to go to CVEC after they complete the first substation of the project. I think it was the first
Zion substation. Spring, May, June, July.
And
spring,
so
the summer.
The board can determine if they want to pay for that out of fund balance or if they want to bake that into their tax rate. And then also, what up to the first $500,000 for CVEC too, any of those tax incentives that we're gonna get revenue from them, but we're gonna pass it back through.
Right.
So those are gonna be some of the major cost drivers, in addition to some others. So tax rates and fees and guys. So if you remember real estate, we're currently at 0.939, personal property 435, business personal property, we're at $2.90. Really, the only thing you can do as far as business personal property goes, obviously all these things, you can adjust the rates, you can bring them up, you can bring them down.
Except those two minor bullets.
Yeah, the two minor bullets under business personal property, you can adjust some of the...
They cannot.
Well, no, they cannot. That's up to the commissioner could. He could adjust some of the limits for what's being assessed or change some of the depreciation schedules for some of that. But that's completely up to the discretion of the Commissioner of Revenue. Obviously, machinery and tools were at $1.90. Vehicle license fees, the board.
You added the trailer one.
Yeah, you added the trailer fee last year, which is $18 per trailer for 140. And then, we'll keep on throwing it up there and see if it ever sticks with the business license fee.
Or a free business license.
Or a free business license fee or anything to track things. Staffing issues. We know that there's going to be multiple agencies that are going to have some requests for staff. Social services, we've already been meeting with departments going over their budget requests. So far, social services has 1.5 FTEs. Library will have some part-time help. We haven't met with Sheriff, but looking through his budget, I think,
I pulled it out of the budget proposal. We haven't met with him yet, but it shows two full-time deputies. Again, I think if state funding comes through, and then one internal promotion where we would not fill this if they filled this, but it'd be an internal change. That's a relatively small one, but it's a personnel move.
In addition, the board has talked about the fire EMS chief position. That's also another staffing issue. And there was discussion in the past of a joint schools and county PIO position.
The public information officer, to do all the social media, the marketing, the news, whatever, just because we're cattailing it out of every different kind of department. Now, it's not super high on the priority, but we've talked about it for several years.
And then in addition, you know, you're gonna have a need for public utility staffing with the addition of Zion's Crossroads coming on board. You're gonna need more staff to manage that system. In addition to the already, we're probably short on the people that we have for the existing utility systems that we have. Then again, pay and benefits. So during the fiscal year 20 budget, we're going to do a review of all salaries for potential targeted raises. And Steve, do you want to talk about some of these?
So I don't know what the money's going to look like this year, and I'm not sure what we're going to have for that you may want to do as far as cost of living raises or other type of raises. But there are still a fair amount of folks, full-time folks, that make $12 and $13 an hour, and maybe those are the ones we want to look at for targeting if you're not going to do something bigger. But it's one of the things we'll give you some options on. The step plan, we've kind of promised this, and we just have not had a lot of time to try to build this. We need contract help if we want to build a plan for this. What concerns me more is that so we create a step plan and tell you what the costs are going to be, how are you going to fund it? Because you can barely fund regular pay raises now. And, oh, by the way, you can't, like the schools, can't promise a step increase the following year. So while lots of people would say, oh, my gosh, we've got to have a step plan, and most of the constitutional officers and some of the regular department heads are clamoring for it, I don't know how you're going to fund it if we put it back in. But if you want that done, I really need some help. Jessica's way too busy to be trying to do the analysis on it. We have a basic core one done. We have some options, but we're going to need help on that. The BCC pay plan, you have not changed the board, commission, and committee pay since 2014. July of 2014 went into effect. So I built in some potential options for you. So for instance, like here on Planning Commission, this is what their current annual is. That went into effect in July of 2014. Been 5 years. I would propose maybe put a bump on those, and it's not much of a bump. This is, I think $120 a year, but it's about a 5% increase. And then like on the Social Services Board, that hasn't increased since 2014. Again, this would be about a three. I was just trying to bring them all up about the same amount in the different categories. That's why they're different percentages. But I was trying to bring them all up relatively on the same. Slope. But anyway, so we've got these built into budgets for you to consider. Yours will have in your budget too to consider, and then it has to be ratified in May. But the ones that are in yellow are potential changes to the dollar. We've not changed the jail board one in 10 years or so, and so that would be a potential to change it from $85 a meeting to $90 a meeting, things like that. So that's what the pay plan is for the Boards Commission and the Committee.
Those board numbers, that was per month, right?
Yeah, exactly. it would be $100 per month change for each board member, you got a chair, vice chair, and regular members, but that the projected there is $100 per month different from what you're getting now.
Did I hear correctly this morning, Charlottesville City Council?
They want to
be able to pay themselves 20% of what the city manager makes. City manager, last one, made $195,000. So $40,000 essentially for each individual member, and the mayor would get twice that. We'd get $80,000. Now, that's not going to pass. It's not going to pass because the state legislature has to give them the authority, and I can't imagine they're going to do that because other localities would be clamoring for that then too, potentially. They probably will not get it passed. It's more symbolic, I think, but... but that's what it would equate to, $40,000. And then one of them said they were trying to get a living wage for the city council. Well, if you want to make them city councils and make them full-time employees, then you need to do that. But you all are not full-time employees now either. It's a.
I just remember when the gentleman from
Fairfax.
Frank George called up and said, "This is the."
Oh, the assistant.
This is the office manager
for one of the supervisors.
Can I speak?
Fairfax like Fairfax. 90.
Fairfax gets paid
$90,000 plus a staff of five staff. People. Like right. A staff of five people.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a difference. But anyway, So those are there, and just because we look at it periodically, and it's been 5 years, so I'm just going to propose it again. And then there is going to be a big wedge put in the budget for health insurance. We're meeting with them in a couple weeks. January. And when we last looked at it about 6 weeks ago or so, or 8 weeks ago, it is going to be substantial.
You say a big wedge.
Yeah, like a big cost increase.
$200,000 less than what we put in the budget this year.
Last year we said we thought it was going to be 438.
They came up.
And it went down to about half of that on the increase. It will be higher this year because the costs that drove it last year are worse this year.
They're still increasing, and they don't project those costs to drop off.
So your insurance plan covers, essentially, if everybody in the county spent no more than $45,000 in health insurance costs during the year, we would have savings. They would give money back to us. But you've got several that are way, way above that. They're in the 300,000s because of the type of care they need or the type of illness they have. And so we'll know a little bit more about those numbers in January, and then when I present my budget 1st of February, we'll have fairly tight numbers there, but it won't be finalized until later in the spring anyway. Yeah. But it's going to be substantial this year.
Are you going to eat up probably that $200,000 in this next budget on that?
No, that's already a sunk cost. So let me explain it this way. Last year, the cost for the county was $1 million for health insurance.
Right.
Because of the increase, the cost of the county went to $1.2 million. That $1.2 million is still the next year and the next year and the next year. What we're talking about now is how much more is it going to cost above the $1.2 million? That's the $400,000 or $500,000. And it's because the experience rating for our small pool of people has about four cases that are catastrophic coverage in the $200,000-$300,000 and more. Now, there is some good news. One of the people will age out because they'll move to Medicare. And so that helps a little bit. Anyway, there's some fairly large expenses there. And we'll have a detailed report in January, but it's, I just want you to be aware that we're not faking. We weren't faking last year either. We just moderated, but it's going to be expensive this year.
And then the board all.
Yes. Well, this one's definitely not.
This can be real news. And then also the board talked about a capital depreciation fund, planning for that in the CIP. You know, an ideal scenario would be to put 1 cent in for each county and schools to, you know, just let it build to, you know, if we have to ever replace a building or something like that down the road, you know, we would have the funds available. But I think in the current budget scenario that we're going to have this fiscal year, I don't necessarily see that being an option per se, but it's something to talk about. That would be a good practice to have, but I think it's going to be tough to do within this budget.
We're
going to
leave it on the list until we're told to take it off because it's a good discussion point every year. We need to put some money aside for future capital expenditures.
And then also we'll kind of review our county CRM and MRR to see what projects we need and what capital improvement projects are out there and what the board wants to fund via the tax rate or from fund balance.
$6 million in requests?
There was around $6 million in requests. And just remember, so at the next meeting, I'll be giving you the new updated unassigned fund balance figure for as we move forward and as you go into the budget season to kind of know what you have to work with. One thing just remember, too, we always kind of got that wedge out there for what we're going to be putting into the Zions Crossroads project. I think we were talking about right around $3.5 million. That's going to be cash funded. So whatever is out there in that unassigned fund balance, take the $3.5 to $4 million off the top, and that's kind of.
And we're hoping that will moderate because again, the bids came in $1 million less than we projected, so it may only be $2.5 million we have to use, but we don't know that until the project's done. So we've got things to go. School system, you just heard earlier, the things they laid out, just a good discussion was about 7 cents worth, a little over $2 million.
So as you can see, there's more cents on the expenditure side right now than there is on the revenue side. So
you've given us a good news. Now what's a bad news?
in every year you hear lots of these bad things, and every year you seem to find a way to do this. But I understand that we are at a kind of a pretty pivotal point here on our tax rate, and I don't know yet. I just don't know. Obviously, we have to see what revenues are, but...
Well, and obviously from the reassessment, our tax rate is going to, you know, on the surface, it's going to lower in the dollar amount from where we are at the 93.9 with reassessment.
It'll be the same amount.
It's going to be the same amount, but the number itself, just from a pure visual standpoint, I know there's always been comment and question that, oh, well, you know, we don't want our tax rate to be higher than Charlottesville. Well, we're getting to that place.
Yeah, but coming here, you're gonna lower it several cents.
It's gonna lower, but there's a lot of...
I know, you're saying then we're gonna bump it back up.
It just never stops.
You may or may not.
Start with a lowered amount.
That's right.
But then you're gonna have to decide what you want to spend money on, and almost every year you decide to spend money on something because you think it's important and necessary. So we'll see where we are.
Or it's required. We don't have a choice in some of the matters. Like CVRJ, if their jail prices go up, we don't have any choice in the matter. We have to pay it.
That's $400,000 increase.
Yeah. And it may not be quite that much, but that's where
it is
right
now. That was the forecast.
I've got the whole thing in my office. But the other thing to keep in mind is really you don't have a lot of revenue sources now to go to because
Well, I would be curious to see in particular what the projected revenue change would be, and I know we don't control it, but it'd be nice to know, of moving from a 10-year scale to a 25-year scale.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We can tell you. We've got a spreadsheet that calculates it on the fly. If you want to know what it is to go from 5 to 10 to 20 to whatever percentage, we have it ready. I can pull it up right now, and you just plug the number and it tells you. But again, that's not your choice.
No, I understand that.
So you all have to have a conversation with the commission.
No, I understand
that. Because
it's
about the only thing left that you have some flexibility as far as revenue stuff, because you've already hit the vehicle taxes, the vehicle license fees, and I think they may be kind of at the margin of what you can do. You can add more to it, but it goes to a specific fund in the state. I don't think we keep it. The personal property for individuals is probably pretty high already. You don't necessarily want to hit that. You've lowered the business personal property. Maybe you need to look at the depreciation stuff. Machinery and tools is low. Business license fee is not going to bring much, but it would just be a validation of trying to do checking, you know, planning. Have they done their building inspections and are they properly zoned in SGPs and stuff? There's not a lot of, you're not going to put a lodging tax in effect because you don't have any lodging in the county right now. The meals tax didn't pass. That's three more years away. You're not going to, it's unlikely you're going to do a B-poll. You used to have a merchant's capital tax in the county, and that went away 12 or 15 years ago. You could theoretically do that, but I don't know, you wouldn't necessarily want to do them all at one time, but you can't have a B-poll and a merchant's capital tax. You can only have one or the other. So there's not a lot of places to go for revenue other than appreciation of property values and business personal property. Anyway, that's a kind of a preview. If you think of stuff, if you have questions, if you want us to, this should say not fiscal year 20 budget preview, sorry. If you want to, if you've got some ideas or you want us to look at stuff, let us know, because we will then set you up for your meetings in January where you're going to come in and see kind of a preview of where we're at budget-wise, and then I'll formally present the budget the first meeting in February. But if you've got ideas or questions, in the meantime, holler.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bell.
Now, Mr. Mr. Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into the closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A7, Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel, prospective industry, litigation, and legal matters, and investment of funds.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Now closed session.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public such business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements in Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion which was closed, by which the closed meeting was convened, were discussed or considered in the meeting.
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, motion passes 5-0, do we have a motion to extend?
Motion made.
Second?
To extend to 9 p.m.
Till 9.
Till 9 p.m.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye, motion passes 5-0, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
Do I have a second? We have a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye, we are now adjourned.